Warning, this podcast was produced by two men who still think that swearing is both big and clever. As a result, it contains quite a lot of it. Therefore, this podcast is not suitable for children, unless they're really fucking cool children.
Yes, people, it's another episode of Pop Collaborate and Listen. My name is Dave Fensom. I'm here, as always, with Mr. Krista Greer.
I am still here. Hello, everyone.
And this week we are joined by a very, very special guest. It is none other than the amazing Mr. Cliff Barnes.
Very, very special. I am very, very honoured and excited to be
here. Mate, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate you doing this. Cliff is from the Devil Times 5 podcast for all your horror movie needs, but also... is the man behind the Carolina Brunswick pub in Brighton.
The man behind the Carolina Brunswick. That just makes you sound like a porn star.
A pub molester.
What are you doing behind her?
But yeah, that's where Dave does some comedy stuff. There's loads of comedy stuff going on there. Dave does some, and that's where we're going to be doing our Fringe show.
It's a legendary comedy venue in Brighton. Yeah. It's like it's the underground home of comedy in Brighton.
Absolutely.
It's got a great fucking legacy.
If you're in Brighton, definitely pop in. Have a go on the pool table and put some Slayer on the jukebox.
Yeah, don't let any of the people that drink there touch you, though.
No, God, no. Yeah. Right, look, we are here today because we're going to be talking about the Prodigy's Music for the Jilted Generation album. And Cliff is here because you were a big fan of Prodigy. So we've got you in to give a kind of another opinion on all of this stuff. Let's start off with before this album came out, right? So this comes out 1994. It's number one for 1 week in July of 94. Before this comes out, are you a fan of the Prodigy already, or what's going on?
Yeah, so they first started releasing singles in like 91, 92, when I was 15, 16. Now, I was just a full-on metaler at the time, kind of alternative-y stuff. And I'd had my own kind of... disco demolition night, a bonfire of the dance music. So all the house music that I'd listened to when I was younger than that, I had binned because I found it faintly embarrassing.
Oh wow! Okay.
To still have a collection full of house music when I was a metaler now.
Right. Okay. That's not a good look.
Not a good look. But and it was stupid as well because there was some pretty good stuff in there. But
we've all been there, man.
But you know what it's like. I was that age where I thought that all kind of indie guitar music was namby-pamby. All dance music was what we called Kev music in Croydon.
Spides in Belfast. It was all Spides.
Trevs,
right. Lovely.
Yeah. Chavs.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I did secretly like Charlie, because, how can you not?
I mean, that is a banger. Yeah. That's, obviously, you heard that at the time. That was the first thing they properly... got noticed for.
Yeah, it was on the box.
Yeah, it's a great tune.
Then some of our mates were involved in the girls' school's fashion show. So we went along that Friday night, whatever it was, and one of the catwalk songs was Out of Space. And it was the first time we'd heard Out of Space. And we all agreed, what the fuck was that banger? That was
right, amazing. Okay. Yeah, sure.
So, I got hold of Project Experience and... I loved it. I thought it was fucking great.
Oh, right. So you were straight in with the first album, like, as soon as you could, as soon as you'd heard those couple of singles, you got the first album and you were a fan straight up.
Yeah.
Cool.
Then Jilted Generation came out and, by kind of 96, I was into dance music enough to go to the dance day at the Essential Festival up the road in Stanmer Park.
Oh, yeah.
Tickets, 19 quid.
Jesus Christ.
Fuck that, mate.
It was so, I'd moved down to Brighton by that point and I was quite comfortable being both a metaler and back into dance music and hip-hop or whatever.
Okay, but so between Experience coming out and Jilted Generation, you were anticipating the album coming out. You were excited for it. It was...
I don't remember that at all.
Oh, right, yeah.
I mean, my memory of that kind of age is very hazy due to the amount of White Lightning I drank and the amount of acid
that
I took.
That will do
so,
it.
Those things will do it, man. Yeah.
Okay. All right, so Dave, what about yourself?
Well, I mean...
First album, yes,
basically,
no?
I loved Out of Space, didn't mind Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in the place fine, bit ravey, can take it or leave it,
sure, okay.
whatever. There was a big gig, and one of the people who listens to this podcast referred to it on my Facebook page, but they played Quadrant in Dunstable.
Okay,
and
yeah. Loads of people, I didn't realise they'd done that.
Yeah, loads of people at college went and saw it, and I wasn't one of them, but everyone kind of came back with this kind of inflated opinion of the Prodigy, and all of a sudden the kind of the word started to spread, and that record became... like, you know, more played on the sixth form radio and stuff like that. So, I mean, and then when I, by the time I heard the first single from this, I was ready for
it. You were, okay,
I was, I was very excited for this, and we played the shit out of this record.
Okay, but, fair enough.
Yourself?
I loved Charlie. I was definitely, you know, much more of a pop kid in like 1990. I was starting to get into indie stuff. I was nowhere near metal at that point at all. Nirvana, yes, fine, but you know, even Metallica, not my thing. And so I was happy listening to a load of dance stuff. Charlie comes out, I'm like, yeah, this is great. Everyone in the place, I thought that's fantastic. Weirdly Out of Space, I wasn't so much of a fan of, but I was into that at the time. But then I kind of very much pivoted into the guitar stuff and went away from dance. And so I also turned my back on Prodigy a bit. I did think, oh, it's a bit simple. It's a bit, especially because all of the Toy Town techno stuff that followed it.
Yeah.
You know, all the Sesame Street.
Yeah. But that stuff got too much.
Exactly.
It stands up, though. If you go back and listen to it, it's really good fun.
You see, I knew that you'd be into that. Cliff is... you know, a lovely guy and has some brilliant taste in music. But every so often he'll just come out and go, oh, yeah, no, you know, rednecks are brilliant.
Come on, Joe is good. But I wouldn't say rednecks were brilliant.
Not as good as old Popper and Oak.
Just like I didn't go out and buy, you know, whoever it was, did Trip to Trumpton.
Urban Hype?
Yeah.
Urban Hype. No, exactly. Those I thought were, you know, very bad. And I did think, oh, well, that's the Prodigy's influence, not their fault. It's probably the influence, but so therefore, that's not for me anymore.
I mean, the Rhubarb track was a banger as well, though.
Fucking Shaft, Jesus Christ.
No, but Trip to Strand, that was good. Pew, pew, Bonnie McGrew, got the dibble and grub.
Yeah, it was. And they were huge. They were all top tens. But I was not anticipating the new Prodigy album. And so whenever they started releasing singles off this album, I wasn't seeking them out. I wasn't going mad to hear it. It all sort of gradually came upon me, as we'll get through this, I'm sure.
All right, well, look, let's start like we always do. Yeah. Let's look at the cover.
Right.
This is a cover that my mum saw yesterday and went, oh, that's a horrible picture.
Oh, wow. Mm. Yeah. I see, okay.
It is a horrible picture. I don't know what they're going for, really. It looks, I've always thought it looks shit.
I'm not a fan of it. I think it's very cheesy.
It's got that Lawnmower Man kind of early CGI.
Sure, yeah.
It's kind of almost like the cop at the end of Terminator 2, like in the it's kind of anguished face,
or like the faces in the spinning column in the Hellraiser sequels and that.
It's a face look that looks like encased in metal, screaming and trying to get out of some more metal.
I mean, it's kind of iconic. I mean, I've never liked this, like this weirdly curved fucking Prodigy logo as well, where they've where it's got like the the early desktop publishing rap on it, word art rap. Yeah. And as even Leon Howlett has admitted, music for the Jewish generation is a fucking clunky title.
It really is. Really. And I suppose we should talk about that. Why is it called that? You know, why is there a man screaming? Why is the inner artwork?
Well, I think the inner art picture is one of the best NAF pictures I've ever because it's kind of painted in that style that you might see a banner at the back of a biker bar. Do you know what I mean? But it's a raver across a canyon from a load of police cutting it off to go to the fucking Babylon sound system.
Yeah,
right? And you know, it's a classic kind of. Like
sticking it to the man, you know, fuck the police. And the reason that was done, and the reason why we're saying why it was happening, is because we were on the cusp of the Criminal Justice Bill.
Yeah.
And that had been being talked about for a long time, and it was about to come in 1994.
I'm going to confess something absolutely terrible about myself.
Right? Oh, dear.
I knew some guys who lived in a squat, and they and a load of other people going on about the Criminal Justice Bill, saying they're going to ban all music, they're going to ban all dance music. And I thought, that can't be right, surely. So I went to the library and I looked at the fucking bill that had been published, and I read all the legalese. And it did say, you know, gatherings of more than X people where repetitive beats are being played.
Yep.
But the idea that if that got passed, all music that wasn't classical music was going to be banned was so ridiculous. And so I was a bit kind of, calm down, guys. It's not that bad. But obviously,
smoke some more weed. Yeah, it's going to be fine.
What it effectively did is it stopped illegal raves on the scale that they were. I mean, they still happen, but you know, I mean, I remember being at like kind of 30,000 people Exodus raves,
sure,
and they were kind of amazing things to be a part of. Like you know, you'd kind of wander up to the industrial estate, and there would be 400, 500, 600 cars all parked all the way around the industrial estate. And you'd just be waiting for this, like Land Rover to come past with a blue light on the top. And you would drive for miles. And sometimes you'd be behind the decoy car.
You wouldn't know
because there'd be decoy cars. Because there'd be, you know, the police would be onto them. They'd be looking to find out where things were and they shut down. And sometimes you'd drive for an hour and 20 minutes. And then you'd kind of find yourself 20 minutes from where you started.
Right.
But you would always, at some point, find yourself there. And you'd get there and you'd be like in a warehouse or you'd be in a quarry. And there would just be thousands of people raving. There'd be three or four fucking sound systems set up with no noise restrictions on. One place would just be playing hard jungle. One place would just be playing like really, really trippy techno. And there'd be this genuine sense. You know, when you're at the fair, right? Mm-hmm. And there's that kind of genuine sense of danger.
Oh, God,
right?
Yeah.
Like, you're like, I'm not safe here. Anything could happen here. And that makes it better.
I see. Well, the illegality of everything.
People don't talk about the downsides of things like that, like having to shit behind a fucking, do you know what I mean? Like on a foundation somewhere because there was no toilet facilities.
Obviously.
Should have gone before you left, really.
But, yeah. The weird thing about me is if I take ecstasy, I'd often quite need a shit. Right?
How many times did you go to these?
Oh, quite a few.
I thought it'd be really funny if you just after all that said once.
After shitting my own shoe, never went again.
Well, Exodus, which is one of the biggest rave collectives in the country, were based in Luton. So we had it very, very well from that point of view. Every weekend, you just headed up to Dunstable and fucking hell, off we went.
Nice.
Getting into the rave was probably slightly post-Prodigy, but probably almost entirely because of the Prodigy. That was the way in.
Okay, that's cool.
As we'll discuss as we go through.
Cool.
Right. Okay. We got 13 tracks and an hour and 20 minutes.
Okay.
Let's crack on.
Well, first one's the intro. Let's stick that on and we can chat over that. This is just a bit of preamble.
Mm-hmm.
Often thought to be from the sample from The Lawnmower Man, but yes. It's not. It's just a kind of similar to something Pierce Brosnan says in that film.
Yeah, it's similar, isn't it? I mean, it's somebody else saying it as well.
Yeah.
And is that to get around copyright, maybe?
Yeah.
It's quite Wu-Tang-y, though. If you listen to the way that Wu-Tang started records,
it's true.
The first of the RZA similarities.
Okay, I get that. I hadn't thought of that, but yes, I see what you're saying.
Bring the rockers! Yeah. Bring the motherfucking rockers!
But Liam had been a hip-hop DJ in the late end of the 80s. And he turned his hand to the rave stuff. But I think by this point, he is putting a lot more hip-hop influences back into his music.
Oh, for sure. And I think that was my end. Anyway, this track is...
Alright, so yeah, we're now into track 2. This is Break and Enter. The first proper song. And that beat just fucking smacks you in the face right away. Straight away.
Got a little bit of the old creeping menace in there as well. That's like kind of a...
You got a low rumble underneath, haven't you?
It does that thing that... we were taught in our music classes, the way you start writing a song is you take a beat and then you have a few bars of that and then you add a bass line and you add a few bars of that and you add these other elements on top and it does that very gradually. It's quite basic.
It's not reinventing the wheel.
It's not reinventing
the wheel.
But
it's doing it very
well. But it's absolutely brilliant. And I think it's an incredibly odd one to start with coming off the back of the Prodigy experience. because it's so dark and oppressive.
I still think this one's quite a different kind of prog. I think this one's quite ravey still, though.
Extremely, because I feel like this is
it's got both worlds. So for me, this is like a good little like airlock between the two, because yeah, it's dark, but it's also got this kind of ravey element in it, you know. You know, I'm just like this, listening to this tune, right, you know, just fucking bobbing
just
along.
Bouncing.
You know, whistles, glass, and we've got a wobbly bass in there as well. I'm not sure this track's got enough going on in it to justify its 8.5 minute runtime.
That's one thing I would say. It's 8.5 and it doesn't go in too many different directions. I love what it's doing, but yeah, it's a long old song.
As part of my music GCSE, I think, I wrote a song that was 8.5 minutes long, instrumental.
Mm-hmm.
It got played to a full audience of parents one evening. It had lots of false endings. After the first false ending, which was about 4 minutes in, they clapped. After the second one, they clapped again.
Uh-huh.
And then as there are a few more, it just turned to laughter. People just actively taking the piss out of my 8.5 minute masterpiece.
Nice.
Yeah.
It was just awful.
Oh, yeah. Thought about a remaster, bring it back to all the rage. But yeah, man, this has got a nice kind of like deep groove into it. It's got the bleeps left over from the experience. It gets proper squelchy in the last minute as
it
well.
Does.
Really kind of
sure.
Knopping out. But yeah, as I say, I think this is a good like depression chamber from experience into what's coming.
And until I was researching stuff for this recording, I'd always assumed that the vocal sample was going, "How's your garden grow?"
Well, why wouldn't
amazing.
You think that?
Yeah,
I mean, so playing days are over. but that's interesting as well, isn't it? Like starting the first vocal sample on the second album goes, "Playing days are over."
Wow. Yeah, well, indeed. Well, there's a real intent behind this. It's called Break and Enter, which I think also is going to refer to the illegal raves, where they're just getting into places and setting up a system. It's smashing glass. It's dark. It's dirty. It's more menacing. It's not the, you know, the happy stuff that you might think he could just have gone on and done. And yeah, the playing days are over. He's fucking means business. You can tell immediately that Liam Howlett means business with it. Yeah, and so far we are, you know, we have loads of elements.
Yeah,
loads and loads of stuff's happened, and it's pounding along. And I'm thinking, this is what this song is. This is where this is going, and this is what it's doing. But then we get this shit, and this fucking kicks it up a notch. Mm. This is absolutely wonderful.
Yeah,
that little keyboard line lifts it up.
And this is what he's so good at. He's so good at like that thing you said. Start off basic, you build it up, you layer it, and then just drops loads of it out and works out how to build it up again. And it'll build, you know, and we'll see this again and again throughout this record.
Mm.
Just the way he kind of drops builds and back. There's no one else quite like him to do it, even in this, you know, kind of world where, you know, where we've got electronic dance music. I'm never calling
EDM,
it that. I fucking hate it.
Well, I don't know if that's true, because Chemical Brothers do it just as well.
Well, all right.
But this was...
This was groundbreaking.
When did Exoplanet Dust come out?
95.
Right. Yeah. So this came first.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Is it too early to say this is my favourite track on the album?
Oh, right. Really? Yeah.
Mm.
Fine.
Oh,
no,
wow.
Hey, mate. Right, because recently you went to a night where they played the whole album in full on a big sound system and danced your arse off.
Which you a tenor
for. How did it sound on like a massive system?
Oh, it's incredible.
Yeah.
I've never
Take
heard this played
off.
In a club before. It's awesome. What a... Right, thank you.
No, absolutely.
You owe me.
Absolutely. I imagine so. Because this is a song that deserves to be played in a club. It wasn't a single, but it deserves to be heard on a stupid sound system that'll make your bowels evacuate. Mm.
Well,
well, I mean, that's what you've established.
Quite.
Maybe that's what it was. Fucking. Orbital had the Brown Album.
There you go. But yeah, so again, we've got a little breakdown. It's peaks and troughs throughout this song. It's not just a throwaway thing. I think there's much more in evidence of Liam Howlett thinking about journeys on each track and journey throughout the album. This is a proper album. It's not just a collection of songs he's thrown together. I think this is fantastic. I think this is absolutely brilliant and a wonderful way to start the album. Yeah. You know, after that, the spoken word intro, just to crash in with a breaking glass, huge breakbeat, and you smack back in. I think it gives a flavour of everything we're about to get, and it shows us that we're stepping away from the previous incarnation.
See, the interesting for me is, like, I will criticise it and say, I think it's too long, right? But I say I think it's too long from the point of view of sitting and listening to it. I suspect if you spoke to 1994 me, and I'm not sitting listening to it, I'm dancing to it, I'd have probably wanted another couple of minutes.
Right.
Do you know
shit
what I mean?
Shit dribbling out of your shorts.
Yeah, well, there you go, mate. Yeah, shit dripping out of my shorts and my 15th pill coming up.
Yeah.
Right, cool. Right.
Like I say, this is the longest song on the album, and it's track one, which takes some balls to do as well. I imagine XL aren't, you know, the Taskmaster record label that Island or Mercury are going to be, but surely there's probably someone going, do you need this to
mate,
be track one?
There is there is no one at XL Records after what Prodigy sold on fucking Experience and what everybody else on XL was selling at the time that's going anything other than fucking hell, let's hope people like this one as much.
although it does kind of have a bit of an issue later on in the album.
Indeed. I think, and I haven't done any actual research on this, I think this is the longest album that we've had to do on this podcast.
Yeah, I think
because
you're right.
It's a full 78 minutes. It's like, you know, a CD and then a little bit, basically. They've stretched every bit they
can.
Well,
the reason that One Love is an edit
is
because the full version of One Love made it. Is this what we're talking about?
Yeah.
It made it too long.
Too long, exactly. And they had to cut other songs off. Mm. Yeah. But I think this might be the longest album we've done.
I think you might be right. The only thing I can think about that was close was that fucking, I think that Fleetwood Mac album we did was pretty long.
Oh, that was, I remember thinking that they had deliberately filled a CD as well.
I mean, one of those songs was about half the length of that.
Yeah, that's true enough.
Anyway, right, let's do track two.
Right, so yeah, that was track two.
Whatever. It's track two proper.
Second
track three.
Actual song. Okay, so here we go.
So this is the one that's got guest stars on it. This is featuring your favourite, Poppy itself.
Poppies, absolutely. Bit of Poppies. This one opens with a line which is almost from Smokey and the Bandit. So he's done the same thing. He's taken a line, changed a word, and got someone else to re-record it. So it's not it's not a direct sample.
A guitar build-up, then it kind of fakes you out here, builds up again.
Can I just point out that someone on our Facebook said that he was told something about this song, and now he can't unhear it. And he says, this riff just sounds like Chuckle Vision.
Oh, no.
Chuckle Vision.
And that drop, man.
Yeah.
That's the first time you've got that fucking big, like, really gated snare. Come on.
Oh, massive, man. Massive.
That beat just sounds like that's a real fucking Prodigy kit.
That's like,
you know, like, if you listen to any track on Fat of the Land, you're going to hear this fucking kit pretty much. It sounds fucking great. This sounds so much like a RZA beat. It's unbelievable.
Oh, you think?
I'm fucking right. Yeah, it does, man.
I don't hear it. I think this is much tougher than RZA.
Listen to the sounds of that, man. I'll play you a couple of tracks on fucking... Yeah, you got Enter the Wu-Tang.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, this is their first rock crossover song.
Absolutely, I mean, you have a huge riff on this.
Yeah, which obviously is bad. So, like, their first, five albums? Ooh, they're all very different. The first four albums. They're all very different, and then the last three albums have all been... I kind of formulaic, but I love them all.
Okay.
This... So, Dual Generation is a weird one. It's very diverse. This is completely different from Break and Enter.
I wouldn't say it's completely different. I think it's... It's different, definitely, but then I think those two are of an ilk. And I think they are different to some of the other ones on there. Because both of them sound harder to me.
It's that grit, and without overusing the word, it's the menace, I think, that sits in the track. Yeah. I mean, I remember hearing this at the time and going, this sounds a lot more punk rock than a lot of the fucking punk rock that people I know are listening to.
And it's always really come alive when they play it live as well.
Yeah.
When they get, you know, a live guitarist to just really fuck it.
Yeah. Did you see them? Was it Giz Butt?
He was
guitaring for them at that point?
He wasn't, not at this point. That was later.
He didn't record on this, but I think maybe he was on the tour.
By the time Fat of the Land, I think he was.
Oh, it was Fat of the Land time, right, okay. Again, I love that there's a new keyboard line comes in that is different to where we started off. And again, it's just like a new element, and it switches it up another notch for me. This is fantastic.
Yeah, well, this is what I've put exactly the same thing. It's just these little additions in the mix, builds it up, drops it all over again, then lets it build. And every time that beat drops, it's just fucking satisfying, isn't it, man?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And this is one that, at the time, when I was DJing in the indie clubs, I could get away with playing this one because it had the Pop Lead Itself crossover. People knew it because of that. But it just worked perfectly for that sort of a club.
Like, I remember hearing this and kind of going, like, you know, you're prone to hyperbole in your teens. But I remember thinking, oh, this is like really reinventing music, you know, in a way that I think the only other time I really felt like that is like when I heard
Mr. Blobby by Mr. Blobby.
Mr. Blobby, yeah. But Mind of a Razor by Gunshot.
Oh, you know, damn. I mean? Right.
Sure. Napalm Death.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Fucking loved it, man.
Oh, that was killer.
But yeah. I was primed for that shit. But I really, really enjoy this tune. I saw someone on Facebook was like, "Oh, it's the worst tune on the album," and I don't buy into that.
No, I think it's great. I mean, I think I've heard it enough times that I don't need to hear it that many more. I'm a little bit weary. I never want to hear it again. But I was playing this an awful lot, and so I'm like, yeah, this is great. But if I didn't, you know, if someone made me a 50-minute version of this album, and they took this one off, I wouldn't be overly.
I'd be sad. Cliff said, I think this is one of those. This is the one of those tracks that's just absolutely soars in the live set. It's just a highlight of the live set.
How long's the track?
It is 6:40.
It's too long.
I've said that exactly the same thing. I love it, but I think there is a case. Take a minute off this. There is 90 seconds. Yeah,
there is. You know, I think if you make the case of this album versus Fat of the Land, right, which is not a conversation for today, the one of the big arguments you get, I think, is the fact that between the two, Liam Howlett worked out that 6:30 was not the ideal length for every single song on the album.
Yeah. No, I reckon you could cut this to 5 minutes. You wouldn't lose any of the impact of it.
No.
And it would be in and out, and you'd be happy.
And do we know to what extent it's a true collaboration? Is it just a Pop Lit Itself sample, or did they actually write it together?
They've got writing credits.
Yeah, so but... I'm assuming that Clint has had input into it. I don't know whether he wrote the guitar part, because obviously I don't know if he played it himself. Right. I'm not sure, but yeah, he has a writing credit. But that could just be because he says, fuck them in their law on it.
Who knows?
Don't know.
I don't know. We should research that.
Not sure.
A little late, but
yeah, true.
Cool. Right. So yeah, again, so we're I think universally 2 for 2.
Well, straight up. Yep. Absolutely. Brilliant stuff.
Right, so third track. Now interestingly, this is one of the tracks that Liam Howlett has since said, if you're looking for the definitive version of this is a track that the album can live without.
Oh.
There's two tracks he said you can take off the definitive listing. Dual Generation, it's still Dual Generation. This is one of them, and we'll get to the other one
in a bit.
So yeah, it's called Full Throttle. Let's have a listen.
Fine. And I must admit, in my listen through for this, when I was looking at the track listing, I couldn't remember it in my head.
No, there's three tracks that are very similar.
I was like, how does that one go? Yeah. And I could not remember. And even when it started, and it starts, you know, like this, and you're fucking, this is steaming along from the off, but I still couldn't place it until the proper, like, the melody comes in. But it wasn't one that made a big impact on me back in 94.
This is, because I think this bit of the sound, this is quite unique to this album. It's the kind of trancey, tribal, dancey kind of stuff that they're doing here. Right. The high BPM, like, yeah, it's got a bit of a throwbacky rave feel to it.
Oh, this is very
but
much
it's looking,
on the rave,
yeah. I don't think this is a bad track.
No, it's good. It does sound a bit like a B-side, but...
Right.
But no, it's really good. It's got this piano bit coming up. It's got those really good squelchy bits.
Yeah.
It's got what sounds like an Art of Noise. Hey!
Yeah, well, I was wondering if it was the same hey from the Art of Noise stuff, and I looked up the samples, and it didn't say it was or wasn't.
It's got a nice little menacing laugh in there.
Yeah.
but I'm a fan of A Menace in Life. But this sounds like Experience era.
Sure. Oh, this sounds like Everybody in the Place to me.
Exactly.
Yeah. But until I heard this, I couldn't remember. And then when it came in, I was like, oh, yeah. This tune, of course I remember this tune.
And you can tell that Liam's not an enormous fan of this one. Do you know how he can tell?
Go on.
Because it's under 6.5 minutes long.
It's only five minutes long,
yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's big kind of rave drum beat on it. This piano break, which is very much what he was doing. That sample, which is from Star Wars, but is reversed and scrambled, so he can't get copyrighted from it.
Okay. Well, do you know what the...
It is that ought to keep those fighters off our backs, apparently, when Luke's flying into somewhere on that.
Okay, yeah. I never knew that.
No, it's something about full throttle, like go full throttle, that'll keep the off our backs. But they've scrambled it up, yeah. Oh, yeah, we're going in full throttle.
Right.
That's, yeah. I think this is terrific. I really like this song. It's a very different feel to me than the first two.
Yeah, I mean...
That's a proper 90s squelchy keyboard. You don't get much of that these days, really.
Yeah, I'm fine on this track. I'm fine listening to it as part of the album. I'm probably not going to stick it on a playlist, you know what I mean? I'm not going to look this one out individually and go, this is the tune. But as it sits within the milieu of the album, I'm perfectly happy with it.
Because I don't remember it as much, I really enjoyed this on my re-listens.
Okay.
Because it was almost fresh to me. It's like, oh, fucking yeah.
Yeah,
I haven't heard this in years.
It's good. It is like the kind of everything and everybody in the place kind of ravey stuff, but mixed with the sinister dark tone of this album.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a lot harder and more sort of somber. Whenever this one came on at the album playback thing that you went to, was it hands in the air, everyone fucking whistles and glow sticks? I imagine, back in 94, if this was played at some sort of legal rave, I think this would take the fucking walls down. Because it's just so fast and doesn't let up.
Yeah, very much that. Very much that.
I think this is a lot of fun anyway.
Lovely. Right, yeah. So that's full throttle. I don't think that's one's as strong as the first two, but, you know, I think it's decent.
Yeah, oh, it's definitely decent. I think that's really
you
good
seem.
I really enjoyed that.
Yeah,
simply because it's between some that I remember much better, and so this was a bit more. Oh yeah, it was like fuck, threw me back a little bit.
Cool. Well, the next one is another underground one that most people don't know.
Yeah,
it's Voodoo People.
Right.
Nirvana sample.
Yeah. Well, it's not a sample.
It turns out it's not. Yeah.
It was replayed by for them so they could avoid the copyright.
Yeah.
Lance Riddick or something. It says the name is.
Live guitar by Lance Riddler.
Riddler,
there you go.
But yeah. But indeed. Okay. Hands up. Did you, at the time, when you first heard this, go, oh, that's very 8 by Nirvana?
Absolutely.
Did you? I didn't.
Absolutely. And I have now heard this song so much that... It was only just, you know, during the research of this that I've thought, oh, I'd forgotten that this was very
Exactly Nirvana.
It's just, yeah, even though at the time I immediately recognised it.
I see. I mean, it sounds like a chainsaw, that guitar, that just cuts right through you.
Yeah, then you've got like that kind of feedback and this kind of like fucking Ennio Morricone fucking whistle.
The weird flute.
Whatever it is, flute, yeah. So, I mean, this... was a kind of instant classic, and you know, again, with all these singles, you can argue the toss whether they've been overplayed or not. But
to me, this one
just fucking gets me every time. It's just holds up like fuck. It's got that massive fucking break in it, and he just keeps like wheeling it up again, wheeling it up, slowing
those
down.
Strings underneath as well drops, coming through. Yeah, yeah. And this was over TV, you know, all the time. I remember the video for this being on every music thing you could think of. And it was a brilliant video, but it was just everywhere.
I think it's a really important track in the way that their kind of formulaic sound developed. There's a lot of disparaging things about the way I use formulaic there, because I love their formula, how it has become. Because it's probably the first one that's got a chant that you can punch the air, chant back at the group when they're on stage. Yeah, the chorus, for one of the better words.
Okay.
And... well, these days when they play it, they play the Pendulum remix.
Right.
Which has just given it a whole new lease of life, even though that's about fucking 12 years old.
That new mix they came out.
So now, listening to the original version, it sounds a bit old, and I'd rather listen to the Pendulum version.
Okay.
But I love the Pendulum version, but I... I've got a real soft spot for this. It's just got like a real kind of just, I don't know, just sank in the rhythm with it, man. I know it's got that fucking extra level of propulsion with the drum and bass feel to it, but I just really, really like this version of it.
Well, I think the breakbeat they use on this is wonderfully placed, because even though it comes through with the dum, 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 it's got that as well. But when it breaks into the breakdown, the breakbeat is just so fucking funky that it makes an entirely new sound.
Yeah, man. I mean, like, you know, it's just really propulsive, right? Mm-hmm. And it's heavy. And most importantly, it's fucking loads of fun.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
And loads of the stuff I was listening to, like, if you listen to metal and grunge and stuff like that, a lot of that stuff, I loved it. They want a lot of fun.
Mm.
And like this, you know, there's a lot of navel gazing and a lot of angst going on. And this just was like, I don't know, fuck, I don't know what the fuck a voodoo person is.
That's because you didn't like therapy. If you liked therapy, you'd have had fun.
Therapy and their songs about murderers and killing people.
I can't have this argument with another person. We're doing a sound thing next week with the lads from True Cop Pulp, and I definitely think we're going to hear some therapy.
Oh, I imagine so. Absolutely.
Yeah, as long as we don't hear any blur, I'm leaving anyway. But yeah, so I love this one, man. I just, you know, again, it wasn't the first one singles from this album that I got into, but it was one of the tracks of that summer and for a couple of summers after that.
Well, sure. I mean, it was the third single from the album. Only got to number 13. This didn't even make top 10.
That's
why
ridiculous.
The fuck did that happen?
Well, I mean, dance music hadn't got big, even, you know, with these big tunes coming
out. But the first two singles went top 10. So this was the third one. The first two went top 10. This one got to 13. And then Poison only got to 15.
I don't know. What were the B-sides like?
Well, the B-sides, on this one, there is a Dust Brothers, hence Chemical Brothers remix, and this is the first time they collaborated together. 94, so we're looking, this is September 94, the single came out. There's a Dust Brothers mix on it, and also in 94, the Dust Brothers did mixes for Jailbird by Primal Scream, La Tristeza Durera by Manic Street Preachers, Patrol by The Charlatans, and Bug Powder Dust by Bomb the Bass, among others. So this was a big fucking pivotal year for the Dust Brothers.
Yeah.
And the Prodigy was one of the people that gave them a foot that up on that. Yeah. Yeah.
But this is the Chemical Brothers Dust Brothers, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, yeah, not, yeah, yeah, not the American. This is the ones that would become the Chemical Brothers. Yeah, but at the time still were allowed to call themselves, well, not allowed, but didn't give a shit.
No one had stopped them.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
Much like the parking sign outside your pub.
Yeah.
I'm just reading the Chemical Brothers huge book at the minute. And, I mean, I'm sure I already knew this, but the fact that they just called themselves the Dust Brothers because they like the Dust Brothers.
Yeah.
That's fucking brilliant.
I suppose if you don't have any belief in yourself that you're going to be major international
and just
stars, then
DJing in the back of your local pub. Yeah.
You're going to enjoy my new band, The Beatles.
Yeah. Okay, right. Well, that's the first four proper songs, and that's a fucking great first third of an album, that is.
Amazing. Yes. Yeah, so let's take a brief break from the fucking hard, from all that hardcore dance that's going on.
Hardcore dance.
Yeah.
Thanks, Grandad.
It's got a little bit out of control. Anyone know?
It's
from the summertime.
Anyway. That's it is. Thank you. Yes.
Anyway, let's take a break and do the albums.
So yeah, what we're going to do is we're going to look at the top 10 albums in the week while The Prodigy was number one, and it is the week of July 10th to 16th. We're halfway through, just slightly past halfway through 1994. Mm. Top 10, not much going on that we haven't seen or isn't a best of. So number 10 is Deacon Blue with Our Town Greatest Hits.
No one cares.
Number 9 is Nina Simone's Feeling Good Best Of Greatest Hits. Number 8 is The Cranberries Everyone Else Is Doing It Why Can't We, which we have done already on this podcast. Cliff, you got any views on The Cranberries?
No, I hadn't heard that album until you. I listened to the podcast, obviously. Mm. It sounded not my thing.
I wouldn't have thought that was your thing. Also, probably not your thing. I don't know if it was anybody's thing, but it got to number 7. It was The Spin Doctors with Turn It Upside Down.
Go fuck
yourself.
What's
on that one? Because, come on, Two Princes is a banger.
That's not on that.
That's not on that. That's on the Pocket Full of Kryptonite.
Yeah. This is the second album. This is the second album, 1984.
So what's the, oh, shit.
Cleopatra's Cat, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's bad.
Oh, awful.
I saw Stephen Hill, shocking, by the way, and he was adamant that it was not that song that he likes. And was
sure, of course
angry
not, Stephen. No, fine.
Take that with him next week.
Number six is ELO's Best Of. Number five is Mariah Carey Music Box, which we have done. Still. Exactly. So it came out, what, end of 92 or start of 93?
I know, man.
We're a year and a half into it being released anyway. Number four is Whitesnake's Greatest Hits.
Of course it is.
Number four in the charts in 1994.
It's a two-song record, presumably.
Yep, mate. Those I give it three songs, and I think those three are great, but I don't want to hear any more.
No.
Number three is Wet Wet Wet's Greatest Hits.
Okay.
That's obviously on the back of their massive number one in 1994.
Love Is All Around.
Love Is All Around. Number two then is Ace of Base with Happy Nation, which was our last episode.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on Ace of Base, Cliff?
No, I don't like him.
Don't like him? Oh, right. I thought you might have been
the sign and all that she wants, they were right. But,
sure, all right, yeah.
Listening to the podcast, there was that track towards the end, which was quite housey and I think an instrumental. I really liked that. I thought that was great.
I see.
I wouldn't call it a dance classic of the time or anything, especially not when we're doing fucking music for the Joy Generation. I really like that.
Oh, fair play. All right, okay. Well, that's your top 10, so it's lots of greatest hits and stuff we've already seen. Nothing very interesting in that. The other albums that got released in this time period, I've made a note of Julian Cope with Autogeddon.
Yeah.
And I was never particularly into Julian Cope. I think he's got a couple of great singles, and you know, I like a couple of Teardrop Explode stuff, but I'd never got the hero worship some people have, and I don't remember Autogeddon coming out one bit.
Don't remember that one. The guy I was in a band with had one of the albums, and I can't remember what it was. It was one called Something Christ.
My wife's going to kill me. She loves Julian Cope.
Does she? Oh, right.
Yeah, whenever he turns up on old Top of the Pops repeats. He's always good value. He's always good.
Mental.
And then Devil, like afterwards, put a couple of tracks on YouTube, and I'm like, yeah, this is all good stuff. I've never been into him, but
I see.
But you know, it's all good stuff from what I've heard.
Jehovah Killed.
There you go. Yeah. But there was. I think the track was on that. That had a thing was like, she looked at me and made the sign of the cross and said, Julian H. Cope, you're a real dead last. Oh. And that kind of. It was quite Nick Cavey. That's kind of stuck in my brain for many, many years. I remember quite liking what I heard of that, but not enough to go and get it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I think you might have been thinking of St. Julian.
Oh, is that what it is?
Oh, no, okay.
Cool.
And I'm just looking up the track he released recently because it's got an incredible title. Cunts Can Fuck Off.
Oh, yeah, fair enough, man.
I mean, that's a favourite for charades at the family Christmas. Yeah, yeah. Four words. First word.
Nice. Cool.
Oh, cracker. Okay, there's a couple which I'm going to say are similar, having heard neither of them. The Mountain Goats released their debut album, Zoopilot Machine. And Elliot Smith released his debut album, Roman Candle.
Man, I had no idea Mountain Goats were going from back in 94.
Same here, man. Same here. I have no clue about that.
They're a Sean McLaughlin band. I'm not really interested in that.
Tom Tuck absolutely loves them. On Twitch or whatever. He plays covers of their songs. Oh. I mean, I think singer-songwriter music is absolutely the worst genre. I'm not interested in anything that sounds like those two get written off immediately. I do not want some cunt with their acoustic guitar or their piano to come out of their little recording studio and play me a song that all it's got is them singing over a fucking acoustic guitar or a piano. That is not why we have recorded music.
Oh, I love it.
It's just the laziest form of music.
I am broadly fucking with you, man. I think there's a couple of exceptions to the rule. But generally speaking, if you're going to do one song with an acoustic guitar, it should be in the middle of a load of other stuff. You can go, here's one.
Yeah.
I see.
Do you know what I mean? Here's the acoustic song. Now back to stuff that actually makes you have a smile on your face. Do you know what I mean?
It's not even about it being depressing or anything. It's just lazy production, you know.
Yeah.
It's just, there's nothing to it. It doesn't all have to be bleeps and chainsaw guitars and, you know, big echoey drum.
Uh-huh.
Machines and all that, you know. Yeah, it doesn't have to be, but it's generally better if it is.
Well, no, I'm going to stand up for the genre. Some of my favourite shit is just bleak, miserable singer-songwriter stuff. Love it. Absolutely love it.
It's the worst.
Right, we got a couple of weird ones. Above the Law released Uncle Sam's Curse.
I don't remember Above the Law. Above the Law, a hardcore band.
I think so.
Group,
right? I think they were hardcore.
I vaguely remember them, but right. I don't remember them at all.
Well, we've got 311 released Grassroots as well.
I always thought 311 were a bit shit.
Oh, of course they were. They're
Swing Beat?
No. 311 were sort of more
funk rap metal.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Did they have a horn? I feel like they
I don't know if they were that far into like the ska stuff.
I feel like they might have done. I feel like maybe they had a horn player, but
it might be. I'm not sure.
They were like a kind of that proto new metal that kind of rode the new metal wave a little bit.
Mm. Oh yeah, they got bigger. They got more attention 2 years later. Definitely. Yeah.
But I never thought they just never had the bangers.
But the final one I've made a note of, and I'm pretty sure you're a fan, is the self-titled album by Downset.
Yes.
Fucking 1994 record, Downset.
Just announced a UK show, but
really,
yeah. But they haven't got Ray singing for him at the minute. He's out of the band, and I just don't want to see him with a different singer at the minute.
I see.
And it's not Aries on the guitar either. So it's. I mean, look, the thing is, like, you got to remember, Downset is a band that has existed since that started, and has changed shape, and the ownership of that band has changed a few times, and there are some fairly bitter disputes about bits and pieces. But you know, those first two fucking records, man, are just blinding. Like, the Downsets, I think they really, really hit their stride with Do We Speak a Dead Language, mm-hmm. second record, but this first one, Downset comes out kind of blazing hot Zach de la Rocha diss on it.
Was that one?
Fool what you say about a set or a sign, stupid motherfucker, never even seen a nine. just fucking going after him, man. Because LA, you know, fucking Downset were graffiti artists and skaters from really bad bits of LA, you know, came with that fucking Latin influence. They knew what they were fucking around with, man.
Right.
They came with some credibility. They weren't, you know, kind of from middle class homes.
Art school.
Exactly that, right? Did you watch that documentary?
Yeah.
They were covered quite well in that documentary as well. You saw them in there.
What's it called? So for the listener?
Underground Inc.
Underground Inc.
It's on Amazon Prime if you ever want to watch it. It was kind of about the commercialization of alternative music in the 90s, but what Nirvana did, and it follows a number of the smaller bands that kind of
got signed
and didn't do the big numbers. So it's bands like Cop Shoot Cop and Handsome, and Failure are the outlier on it, because Failure actually did do some.
But Helmet.
And Filter. They were covered a bit, but obviously Filter actually did do some numbers.
Yeah, later on they did, yeah. But yeah, it's a good documentary.
Yeah, Sensefield bands
like
shit.
when they went singer-songwriter.
Yeah, exactly. What the fuck is that second Filter album? It's terrible.
Million
first
seller,
one's so cool. The first Filter album is so cool, and then the second one is just an absolute piece of shit. First Downset album, I really like. The production's a bit muted on it for some reason, but they are, you know, 10 good songs on it.
Yeah,
and
wow.
I don't think I ever investigated them after that first album.
The second one's fucking, with Anger on it, it's fucking brilliant.
That's the first
man.
One.
So I'm thinking of Empower opens the second album. Yep. No, you're right. Anger does.
Anger opens the first one. Yeah,
Empower opens the first one. Yeah, Empower's on the second one.
Yeah.
But it's got fucking Rape Ritual on it as well, man. Yeah. That's fucking great tune, man. I've got all of the early 7 inches from that because that's.
Oh, nice.
I was really into that. Really, really into Downset. I got that fucking split that they did with Shooty's Groove and stuff like that.
Shooty's Groove.
Yeah, I used to have that. I think I sold it.
Do you know, there was a gig announced, and I spoke to Dave Niebuhr from Dog Eat Dog about this, right? And a gig was announced at Brixton Academy and got pulled. And the lineup, it was like a mini festival. And the lineup was Shooty's Groove, Dog Eat Dog, Downset, Onyx and Biohazard.
Jesus Christ.
What a fucking gig that would have been.
Oh, my Lord.
What a gig that would have been.
What year are we talking?
1993, 1994.
Oh, right. Okay, so actually when they were all...
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So, Dave Niebuhr went, I was like, what happened? And he went, oh, man, we heard it was for some really dumb reason. And I was like, what is it? And he goes, no, I just hope this isn't true. But we heard the reason the show got cancelled is because Onyx mobile phones weren't going to work in England.
Oh, what? Jesus. I mean, they probably weren't because it was 93, 94.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's probably at the time that they're fucking right jumping up high on, to fuck up. Anyway, but yeah, I'd have loved to have seen that back then. But I saw Downset a few times.
Oh, yeah.
I saw him supporting Pantera, I think.
Really?
Oh, nice. Oh, no, I didn't see that show. I saw him.
Holy God.
I saw him headline the day after Machine Head had played in Manchester. and Rob Flynn came out and sang one of the songs with them.
Wicked. All right. Well, yeah, that's a nice one to finish the album section on. Then, well played, everybody. I wasn't in the Downset at all at the time. It was you that told me about.
Yeah.
It would have been Empower. Would have been the first one I heard of theirs, actually.
In what?
Empower. That's how it's pronounced.
Is that a golf? Is that a golfing term?
Fuck you.
All right, so we're going to go with the next track. This one is called Speedway, a theme from Fast Lane.
If you're looking for Fast Lane.
No.
I've
described this as Laser Quest rave.
No.
It's like motorbikes and 303s, isn't it?
A big 303 in this. This is another one that I had trouble placing when I saw the title. I was like, which one is this again?
I mean, Full Throttle and Speedway are basically the same title.
Right, well, it's actually true as well, yeah.
And he just bought a motorbike.
And also, to confuse it, it's Fast Lane as well, so I could never remember which one is theme from Fast Lane. Is it Full Throttle or Speedway?
I do like that 303 squelch, though.
Yeah. Oh, mate, I would have sound of an 303. This is like an absolute arsehole to this back in the day.
I mean, yeah, we're back into a more traditional, after Voodoo People, that more traditional rave thing, the earlier 90s side of things. But it's harder again. It's harder than the experience stuff. Maybe on a par on a par with them, but it's definitely more just straightforward dance track.
Sure. And I think, you know, like describing it with faint praise, I guess, would be to call it an album track, which it very much is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's stuff like this that kind of makes the character of this record.
Pew, 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 pew. The lasers. The lasers. So, theme from Fast Lane. Fast Lane isn't a thing, though, is it? It's just...
No.
It's not a video game. It's not a... It's film, it's nothing, is it?
No, I think this is just one of those things that's designed to fuck with people that have got a slightly literal mind.
All right.
Yeah. I don't like it when people do stuff like that. Because it makes me go, oh, what is this? And investigate it and then go, oh nothing.
It doesn't exist. Yeah.
My band from the 2004 to 8, I was with them, I think.
Mm.
One of our last acts as a band was we managed to get a song of ours put on Project Gotham Racing 3 on one of the radio stations.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, we got paid a flat fee rather than a licensing fee, you know. But we could put, you know...
As
featured on Xbox 360 launch title Project Gotham Racing 3. I thought, this is it. This is our big break. No one noticed.
No? Ah, balls. What was the name of your song?
It was All in the Mind by Psychopath.
How do you call it? All in the Mind theme from Fast Lane?
Well,
or...
that's on the kind of remix single that we put out.
Ah, right, yeah.
Said it like that.
Look, I mean, again, we're back into this. It's veering towards the Charlie side of things, the cheesier factor. But it's not the full-on Toy Town techno thing that we were talking about. It does what it does. It doesn't do much else. And what I mean, yes, you could say it's an album track. It's almost a little bit of filler between other things, but it's not a bad song at all.
No, it's not. What it isn't is if you were trying to say to someone, "This band, fucking, a change in music, revolutionising music. Have a listen to this one. This isn't the fucking one you'd pick.
No.
Right? This isn't the one you'd go. This, but you know, this album sits as a body of work. You know, and you know, Pete, you know, even me who listened to this album so much at the time."
Mm.
You know, you kind of maybe forget about some of the stuff like this, but actually, listening to the album in full, it's not like, oh, it's single, and then lulls between. You're just going, oh, I forgot about this one. This is great. It's got a really great groove into it.
Yeah.
It's got a great groove. Why have I said that?
Wow.
Why have I said that?
Dear me.
I like this one. It's got a good beat. You can dance to it.
Yeah. It doesn't need to be 6.5 minutes long again.
None of these songs that are 6.5 minutes long need to be 6.5
minutes long. Well, this one's the ending is different, though, isn't it? Is this the one where it's got the slow ending, so it's shorter than that? And it's got kind of
are you not thinking of one of the Narcotic Suite ones?
No. I think it's...
I mean, we are now at 4 minutes in. Let's skip through and see what happens here. No. Nah. No, it's just doing that the whole time. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. I wonder if it comes at the start of the energy then on your...
Oh, maybe so. Maybe so. Okay, well, let's let it run into the next one.
It's an interlude rather than a part of this song.
It may well be. Right, song. So this is... Yeah, okay, so this is the end officially of track six, the Speedway. And we're going into the Heat, the Energy. I'm with you. Yeah. Well, actually, I think this works very bizarrely as a first bit of a song.
Well, on my copy of it, right. This comes at the end of the previous track.
I see. I wonder if Spotify have rejigged it. Okay.
Entirely possible.
So it's obviously the same in the same sequence on the album. It's just which track is it part of?
Yeah, right.
And I wonder if on the CD it's actually one of those negative.
Oh, like space a pre. I see. Okay, maybe. I mean, I've said that this. I think it's a strange one for there is because it's like 4 minutes of this, and yes, it's Liam going, all right, I am creating a piece of art. It is an album. There's stuff going on that isn't just, I want you to dance to this, but it is a bit fucking wishy-washy.
But it's a mind-expanding kind of DP House kind of feel, isn't it? It's almost that kind of, right, if you're listening to this album on drugs,
yes,
what is this going to do as you break from that? Go into this. What are they? You know, a lot of these things are designed for a mindset that we're not necessarily getting into that often.
Oh, indeed, and I never was at the time either. So I wasn't at all.
When I was in the club and they played the whole album through, you can imagine this was not a big bang of it. It was a lot of waving arms around.
Well,
it was a lot of catching your breath after the first.
The queue at the bar got slightly longer.
I didn't go to the bar or go for a piss at this point. I could have, but I knew there was something much lamer to come. No, I like this. I like this. This is a nice little bit.
I think this is okay. It's cinematic. It's got some weird little floaty samples.
So look, it's a 7 minute track. It takes 3:50 to get going. And then it kind of goes again into that kind of deep tribal trancey territory.
Well, okay, we're still at 2 minutes here. So let's
skip to the end. Not the end, but you know.
Right, here we are. 3:10. So yeah, we've now got something starting to happen.
So look, this is not the bit of the Prodigy that I most love, but it does do that buildy thing. It's got some nice squelchy little fucking bits in it.
Very squelchy.
Yeah. This is, I would say, even by the time we get to the end, it's one of the more forgettable tracks on this record.
Yeah.
But it's still got a kind of heads down energy to it that I do enjoy. And it feels real, if nothing else.
Okay.
I've got barely any notes on this one because there ain't a lot to say about it. But I do like the bits that go, wow.
Wow.
And when you get the cheesy synth line later on, it's almost too cheesy, but it's also...
Let's skip a little bit. Because again, we're only halfway through this song. Let's skip a bit more.
Oh, yeah. See, I quite like... come on, that's a good fucking proper old-fashioned rave song.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's like 1989, 1990.
And we're probably in Rob Deering and a woman singing something.
Yeah, now this would be one of the ones, another one I would leave off if I had to condense this album. If I needed to cut a couple, this would be one of the ones.
This is not one of the ones. This is not the one. One of the ones that Liam Howlett mentioned, though. In this.
No.
Not yet.
I do find it hard to get any enthusiasm for this track.
Yeah, I'm not waving a flag for it particularly, but it's no. This hasn't dipped below my bottom line for this album, though.
Okay.
If you know what I mean.
Okay.
I'm not going, oh, this is a new low on the record.
Okay.
I've got to think the start is a little bit self-indulgent. I maybe wouldn't have done that in the middle of the pace, but
So, Generation isn't an album that I come back to again and again. So, like, before, you know, listening to it loads for this, I thought, in my head, it's an album full of good instrumental tracks that you can't necessarily dance to. That's wrong. You can definitely dance to this stuff. It's not like I Care Because You Do by Aphex Twin, you know. Good music, but what are you meant to do with it,
please.
Fuck's sake.
Yeah. Epileptic fit.
It's a lot of dancing. Seizure. Remember. Sorry. But it's definitely I would say it's the Prodigy's least danceable. Or
I find this a bit boring. if he's going for something, you know, reaching for a different tack and he's like taking us on a journey again or something, fair enough, it doesn't hold my attention.
Okay, side you know, B.
But it doesn't need to because now it's...
Well, I mean, I do love this song.
This is one of my favourite intros of all time. This is like, you know, in an era where I've got deeply fed up of skits in general, This is one that I'll listen to all the time.
Let's turn this up so we get the full effect here.
Someone on the phone for you.
Oh, fuck's sake. I'm trying to rock this fucking tune, man.
Brilliant. Absolutely wonderful. Yeah. And then into that.
I mean, is it?
The most... I think that's great. It cracks me up. Absolutely cracks me up.
I mean, it's a nice little break, but it's... it's not comedy gold, is it?
Oh, I thought it was. I do think it is. But yeah, here we fucking go. This tune, dude.
Yeah.
Straight from... Right, obviously, you know, because I've heard it a million times, immediately that sort of little bass line comes in, I'm excited. I suspect I was the very first time I heard it. I think it probably was like, ooh, this is good.
Love that.
Yeah.
This drop is still incredible.
This is a hip-hop track.
It is.
Yeah. It's a hip-hop track. And yeah. this is what hip-hop would sound like two or three years later. You know, like by the time you started getting like kind of that bigger hip-hop era, this is mixing that boom bap with the higher level of production,
right?
And obviously it's got that meeting of my, it's probably the most perfect meeting of dance music and hip-hop that isn't like hip-hop by Dead Prez,
right?
Or
the Prodigy's remix of Method Man.
Exactly that, and I love this, man. You know you got this fucking Bomb Squad-esque fucking syncopated cacophony that starts to run underneath all of this, you know, and he wipes it out again and again, fucking solos out the vocals, fucking bang shit, man. But this tune is fucking remarkable, man.
Yeah,
I love this tune. I've heard this song so many times and I still think it's fucking basically flawless.
But it is, like, you know, all those elements coming in again, step by step.
Yeah, it's a brilliant track. He obviously tried to do all those things again on the next album with Diesel Power, and it completely falls flat and sounds awful.
Oh, so. I like Diesel Power as a track.
But in comparison?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You can't scale this wall again, frankly. This is... just a wonderful bit of production.
It's that swagger in it, that fucking drop in the beat. It's like, it's just got that extra note in it. I don't know what it is. I don't know why. It's just such a fucking swaggering beat.
Mm.
But well, it is.
One of the reasons is the drum samples. It takes bits from Skull Snaps, the Amen break, and some Bernard Purdy. Yeah. So it's all funk drum breaks.
Yeah,
he's put different bits of vinegar because it just comes at you in this laid back but hard fucking solid beat. And
these
every
synths
bit
here as well, these synths that just like modulate and build.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and like you say, that to bring it right back down to actual silence, and then build it back up again is a wonderful bit of thinking.
I just hope his parents didn't applaud wildly at that false ending and
Sorry.
I mean, this is always a highlight of their live shows. It's,
I bet you.
Obviously, Maxim's only vocal on the album.
He's got a writing credit on this because...
He's the only member of the Prodigy that wasn't Liam to have anything to do with the rest of this record.
Because, I mean, obviously, Keith Flint was an icon and everything, but it was never the most important part of the Prodigy.
No,
and so when he died, I found the gap, the respectful gap that they took away from playing live and everything, a little too long for my liking.
Oh, I see, really?
I'm like, come on, guys, you don't need Keith anyway. My big story about Keith Flint is that I was in the swimming pool in a hotel in Melbourne the night before or the afternoon before Prodigy was playing at Melbourne Arena, and there was this family who'd just driven up the road into Melbourne, by which I mean 300 miles or whatever, and they were looking at me, and as I got down one end of the pool, it's you, isn't it? I'm like, who? You're Keith, aren't you, from Prodigy? I'm like, no, I'm not. You are, though, aren't you? Because we're coming to see you play tonight. No, it's not me. I mean, I love the Prodigy. Kate's great and everything, but no, that's not me. I swear it's not me. Yeah. So that was incredible to be, because look at me, I do not look.
You don't look like Kate. No,
and it's not like I've got the same piercings, the same hair, or anything.
Have you got an identical stomach tattoo?
No tattoos. You know. So it was really odd, but they were convinced.
You weren't tempted just to go, oh, yeah, of course. Why don't you go and buy me a drink?
Well, the thing is, we had the choice that weekend. There was these two big gigs at the Melbourne Arena that weekend. So there was the Prodigy that night, and we thought, let's not go to see the Prodigy. We can see the Prodigy any time we like. And then, of course, that was like his third to last gig.
Oh, shit, right, I see.
So what we got tickets for the following night was a kind of 90s all-dayer with ACBA, Bewitched, Two Unlimited, Eiffel 65, The Out Here Brothers, Lou Bega, Blue, Benga Boys.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my
You understand
God.
You sound like a crazy person. Yeah.
Exactly. Even with the caveat, you say, oh, we can see them anytime. Given those two choices, I think you're the only person on earth who would have gone, oh, well, I might as well do this one then.
Yeah, well, we've got two choices. We can either, there's a fillet steak, or there's this plate of broken glass and tampons.
We can have a steak anytime we want. Oh, Cliff, amazing.
It'd be even better. It's you, mate, isn't it? It's you. You're the guy from Aqua that goes, come on, Barbie, let's go party.
Oh, shit.
Fuck me. You're right. Okay.
Yeah, but again, only got to number 15, this song.
Well, that's a fucking travesty.
It was the fourth single, so I guess maybe there was, like, everyone had the album or whatever. There weren't any particularly hot remixes on this one, I don't think. But still, not even top 10.
I'm not even mad at that one being 6 minutes and 42 seconds.
No. And again, it's partly, I guess, because it's almost in two halves. It's got the first build, breaks it right down, and then it just brings in so many other bits and pieces for the second half.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. Great video as well on that one. You know, whenever they were starting to do their more kind of dark imagery and go down the we're a bit fucking, you know, hard or tough, and it was not just Keith in a car park. The video for this and for Voodoo People as well, you know, with the strange kind of Haitian witch doctory stuff going on and Keith having to cut himself out of the suitcase. It's a bit more, ooh, these guys are strange.
Yeah.
Yeah, it worked brilliantly. Absolutely brilliant.
Cool, right.
But that's the next, that's, oh no, wait.
No, I think we're...
Oh no, we got one more to go before the break, haven't we?
So, yeah, this one is No Good, Start the Dance.
First single?
No, this was the second single.
Was it? What was the first one?
One Love.
Was it really?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
Absolutely. So yeah, this was the second single, and this got to number four, so it was the highest charting of all the singles on this album. It was May of 94, so it was the one just before the album.
And this is really where it started for me.
Same as.
This is, like, when I heard this song, I was like, I just can't fuck with this. I couldn't hear this song enough when I first heard it, man.
Right.
Like, and, you know, I would say probably Voodoo People is probably my favourite single from it now.
Okay.
But at the time, for a long while, for 10 years maybe, that I would say
it was this one.
And I fucking love this, man. It's at that breakneck speed of the pace of that break, man.
Yeah.
Fucking strings, the beat. Everything about this song excites me. It makes me want, it's, you know, it's Start the Dance. It makes me want to dance.
Yeah. No Good, Start the Dance.
Should we dance?
No.
Okay.
I can't really explain why I thought this at the time, especially given that I really like the Prodigy experience, and this is the closest to anything on that album. But I really took against this track.
Wow.
Oh, I see.
I
okay.
thought it was just way too lightweight, way too kind of, I guess, commercial, because it had a, because it's got that, who is it, Kelly Charles sample.
Yeah, the pitched up. Yeah,
which is presumably from some like Piano House track or from 1987. And, yeah, it just really, I thought it was poor. I love it now. It's a classic. It's,
well, weirdly, the first few times I heard it, I think I had almost decided, because I had heard One Love somewhere, which is the first single, and I kind of dismissed that. It didn't make me go, oh, the new Prodigy is something I want to hear too. And so I was going, ah, fuck it. No, I'm into guitar music now. Up yours, lads. And then I heard this, and the first few times I heard it, I went, nah, fucking dance bollocks. It's just chart fodder. But hearing it over and over in the clubs I was going to, because this, again, got played in all the indie clubs and the rock clubs that I was going to, I was like, oh, no, I can't I can't keep this up.
So I think at the rock clubs that I went to, it was only really Out of Space they played. I don't...
Oh, right.
Not sure they even played this. Not sure they even played Bell or Poison or Voodoo People.
Really?
They played that, like Nick was playing. I'm pretty, either Nick or Bernie was playing this. Probably yes. Bernie, I would imagine. I'm not sure.
I mean, we do have someone on our Facebook group we know from Luton said, my memory is of one of those dickhead DJs in Luton pitching this up and down every time they played it, just going in the breakdown.
Well, yeah.
And that sounds exactly like Nick.
Yeah. But I mean, I think this track as well was at the cusp of me starting to really just fucking go nuts dancing.
I see. Okay.
Just like really just leaning into the fact that I like to dance like a fucking crazy person and didn't really give a fuck what people thought about me.
Sure.
And this was the fucking perfect song because it was all just like fucking legs and kick step and just fucking and it's going
like,
nuts.
Was it like 130 BPM? This is, you know, it's faster than your just standard house stuff, so it's not like that dance beat that you hear. No, but it's like boom, 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 boom.
But that's what I'd like to say. This wasn't the dark. This wasn't that dull fucking 4/4 fucking house plod that was everywhere. People were like,
yeah,
fucking smiley, happy cunts in fucking identical shirts. This was like a fucking breakbeat.
Mate, you're saying that we were going to rock clubs. Everyone was wearing the same t-shirts.
Right. But they weren't. It wasn't the identical Ben Sherman
no,
shirt.
It certainly
fucking
wasn't.
That their
no.
mum had ironed in a different colour. Fucking covered in Paco Rabanne and CK1. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But, sexy.
Yeah, man. Looking for a fucking fight. Do you know what I mean? You see him at the end of the night with a fucking blood stain on it. Oh, better buy enough one more, mate. You know what I mean, eh? Let's.
Yeah.
What do you think about where this is positioned on the album? It seems way too late for
it's me. Really far in.
Yeah.
Really far in.
I'd have fucking stuck this right at the front end of the album.
Not because it's, you know, a catchy single or anything, but because the whole album has been really dark, and then you get this, and it's it just feels out of place.
And not to mention the fact that it's called Start the Dance. Mm. Yeah. Which kind of implies...
Yeah. Oh, well, we've been holding off till now, have we?
What the fuck have I been doing?
Yeah. I know, I would happily swap this out with, you know, Fast Lane or Full Throttle, for example. Yeah. If you're going to take some off, then chuck it up to track 4 or 5. That would make sense to me.
I think this is one of the best tracks of the 90s.
Oh, it still holds up fantastic, I think. It's 30 years old now. And this is still exciting. This is still a great track. And it doesn't sound like in a... There's a lot, I think, of dance music that sounds... Oh, well, it must have been really good at the time. It must have sounded better at the time because you didn't know any better. This is still fucking banging. Production-wise, this is on point.
And a lot of DJs and producers still sample that Kelly Charles
vocal. Oh, really?
Because it's so well-known from this and it sounds great every time.
Right. I didn't realise that the bass line... The is a sped up and really kind of short and looped bit of the beginning of the end, Funky Nassau, which is one of my favourite funk tracks. And I didn't even place it until I looked up what was going on in this song. Okay.
That's the magic of making Liam, music without any instruments. You just take
bits
and you take them. I think a massively overlooked album that just uses sampling to... incredible ends is Brave by Joyride that came out about 4 years ago, I think.
All right.
Big recommendation. I love that album. The use of sampling on it is as good as anything on Paul's Boutique, you know.
All right, okay.
But in a dancey way rather than hip-hop.
I mean, it wasn't around this time. It was a few years later, but whenever Liam Howlett did the Dirt Chamber sessions.
Yeah.
And obviously doing, you know, sampling and, you know, cut and paste stuff, it was... wonderfully done. Really clever stuff he was doing with that.
I enjoyed that record a lot when it came out. I heard that for years, actually.
Brilliant.
I kind of forgot it existed.
Brilliant. I mean, it's probably not on any streaming stuff.
I'm not keen on it, actually. I think a lot of DJ sets from back then haven't aged well because just DJing has come on so fucking well.
Sure. And the technology to do stuff. Yeah, no, that's definitely true. But I having said that, I've probably not heard it in 10 years.
Yeah,
I remember it very fondly. Like, thought it was brilliant at the time, but maybe it does sound passé. I don't know.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, look, we're now 2/3 of the way through the album, so we will take another break and look at the singles that were out.
Yeah.
And let's see what we've got for you here. Okay. All right. So let's do the singles that came out this week. And once again, we'll start with the top 10. We'll see what was out. Number 10 is a new entry. In as much as it was out, I think, the previous year and got absolutely nowhere, And then was re-released, and like I say, here we are at top 10. So here's what this one is.
That's Let Loose, Crazy.
Wow. Crazy for you. Crazy absolutely for you, crazy yeah for you. Yes, it is. Let Loose, Crazy for You. And, I mean, I don't know if anyone else has heard Dave and I discuss this before on here, but we do think it's a fucking brilliant song. I'm going to give you...
total respect.
That's what you get when you get it right. Yeah. That's number 10. Number 9... Oh, dear me. Right. I remember this well.
No. Oh, Word Up.
That's Word Up by Gun, yeah.
Word Up by Gun. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, the cameo cover by Gun.
And are we at the point yet where we can all admit that this is a fucking crucifixion of this song?
Oh, I never liked this
song.
Oh,
I like it.
Oh, it's fucking awful.
Total respect.
You get that though. No, I don't, because I love the cameo version. Ooh. And I think this is just leaden and a bit plodding. Yeah, doesn't do it for me. But it was played in every fucking, you know, rock club.
And I danced to this at the time.
Yeah, probably. I probably did. You know, it was played after Terrorvision and before Bush. It would have been one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. That's number 9 anyway. So it was top 10 hit. Number 8, Big Mountain with Baby I Love Your Way, which we saw in our last episode, in the summer of reggae pop. Number 7, and I put this in especially for you, Cliff, because I can't imagine Dave is going to even remember it. I know I don't. See if you do.
Fuck. I mean, it sounds like Rednecks are possibly the Grid. But...
I mean, it was after the Grid had their Swamp Thing. It's definitely after that. I don't know if we've come across Rednecks yet. I think that might be coming later. But
it's not ringing bells at the minute. But
is it not? Okay.
Let's have a listen.
It's some happy hardcore nonsense.
Sure.
Nearly.
There's no way in hell you're going to know.
It almost sounds like a speeded up. Almost sounds like a speeded up ooh-ah just a little bit.
Yeah.
All right, we've got vocals coming in here. Hold on. I say vocals.
Bloody do-si-do.
Right. You see, it's he's definitely saying everybody do-si-do. Mm.
Yeah.
But the name of this song is Everybody Gonfy Gone by Two Cowboys.
Right.
Wow.
About, yeah, no one remembers that then.
No, of
okay.
course not.
No, well, good. I mean, that's a good thing.
I think there's people in the band that don't remember that.
Well, I'm going to give you...
Oh, fuck's sake.
Yep. That was a top 10. That's number 7.
Yeah, but what are you surprised? This podcast has proved nothing that the British record by a public will
absolute pricks. Yeah. Oh, actually, here we go. So, right, number 6 is Shine by Aswad, but number 5 is The Grid with Swamp Thing. So we're there. Maybe that was rushed out because some record company exec went, Swamp Thing's a top 10. Right, get me some Dutch cunts and put something together for me, please.
You know, one of those Gonfy Gone.
Well, yeah, everybody Gonfy Gone. G-O-N-F-I. G-O-N.
What does it mean? I mean, you're Irish, you must know.
Gibberish, absolute gibberish.
Where's that? Is that north of Limerick?
Yes, number 4. I suspect they're very embarrassed about this, but make sure you give me the correct band name.
It's BC52s, Meet the Flintstones.
The BC52s. I mean, surely this is a money grab.
Right, so I, at the time, was working at a computer company, computer sales company, and in the reception... which is where my desk was, and I was a receptionist. You don't need this detail.
Right, yep.
The receptionist insisted on having Capital Radio playing all day, every day, and they had such a short playlist that they would play this and Four Non Blondes What's Up, which is even worse, sort of 6 times a day for about 5 months.
Yeah. Whoa. Oh, that was enough to make you shoot yourself in the face.
It was hell.
Wow.
It's still not up there with that fucking that Christmas we were working at HMV and our the manager decided we'd sell a lot of Teletubby singles if we played it for the entire fucking 2-hour lunch rush on repeat.
Just the single.
Just the single.
Just the Teletubby say AO single.
It's better than What's Up by Four Non Blondes.
Not by the 8th time in a row, it's not.
All right, BC52s anyway, Meet the Flintstones. Yes, you get...
total respect.
That's fine. Number 3, I'll stick this on, even though Dave and I have seen this before, because we had to do it on an album, but see if you can remember this lovely song.
Ooh,
Yeah. Don't you want me to go?
So honey, it's not something like... Is it Take That?
It's Take That. Absolutely, yeah. Take That.
Is it... Don't need you. Love don't need you anymore.
Love ain't here anymore. Yeah, absolutely. Well done, Cliff. Well done, Cliff. Yeah, no, we had to do the album on that, but it was a little while ago. I mean, it was probably only about four episodes ago, but that has been a while. But yes, Love Ain't Here Anymore.
Total respect.
Gotcha. And then number two in the charts is All For One with I Swear. And number one is Still
Do we ever work out which word they used?
I think it was minge.
Fud.
Okay, but yeah, the top ten. Yeah, Wet, still number one. So that's where we're at. Other singles that were out or charting in this week. I know there's a couple of absolute shite ones, but there's a couple of good ones here as well. Are you going to remember this one at all? This got to number 23. And as soon as he starts singing, you'll be like, oh, of course.
I know what this is.
Crash Test Dummies.
Yeah, there you go. It couldn't be anyone else. yeah, any idea about which one this is?
Has it got like four names in the title or something?
No.
Okay.
Nah, it's Afternoons and Coffee Spoons. No. Yeah, there you go. Got to number 23.
I think fuck they've stopped.
I don't know. Have they?
Why even
I bet
were
you're still
they?
Going.
Were they a country band?
Who knows? Well, they're from Canada,
they're a cunty band.
Who knows?
I really like...
You know, no.
No, you didn't.
No, it's really good.
You might go, tell yourself that all you like, but you didn't.
It's really
Once
good.
There was a guy. So, oh, shit, someone's put this on at 33 by mistake.
It's a fucking whale song.
Right,
it
okay.
It was dark as fuck, though, that song, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, indeed. Right, I'm going to give you a... You're no good. That was Crash Test Dummies. This one got to number 19, and Dave, I expect you to be on this right away.
It's House of Pain. It's that other Over Here shit.
Nope.
Oh.
It is House of Pain, absolutely.
It's on point.
On point.
Yeah. Come on the fucking funky joint. I'm
on
point.
When it's time to rock a funky jam.
I'm the man.
I love this tune. I think it's terrific.
Yeah. Is great. Great album.
Actually, it's a good album.
And basically, what we just did there was twice as Irish as anything about House of Pain. Authentically so.
It was as well. Yeah, no, this got to number 19. I didn't think this was a top 20 song. I remember this coming out. I've got the 12.
Nah, this was the first single off of... off of the new House of Pain album, yeah. After they'd got really like Five More Lyrics, because like when Jump Around got released about three times,
it
I think.
Did, yeah, and then it was also on the B side of another
and
one.
And then
as
it
well.
Finally did some numbers, and then this album was everywhere. It was like everyone fucking had this record, and to the point where I was, and it wasn't a very good hip hop record. Like Five More Lyrics is not a great.
Oh no,
record.
Not at all. No, not at all.
I wanted to like that because I absolutely loved, obviously, Jump Around, but
yeah.
Also the Butch Vig remix of Shamrocks and Shenanigans.
Yeah, okay, yeah, sure.
Which put on your shit kickers and kick some shit. Brilliant
rock club banger.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the album is really disappointing, but yeah. This Limousy. Album, same as it ever was, is just much heavier and cooler.
Yeah, yeah. Second record is much better record.
Well, the production on it is beefed up. Okay, well, yeah, okay, you got that on point. Absolutely right. This one got to... Oh, where did this get to? Number 28. How did this get to number 28?
That is a Killing Joke.
Yes.
And it's Millennium.
Nope, it's the other one.
Pandemonium.
Pandemonium. Yeah. Fucking hell, man. That's
well done, mate.
Good stuff. Pandemonium.
28. It's that, that's fan base.
Absolutely.
Oh, sure.
Fucking brilliant album. What did you say?
It's just fan base, isn't it?
To get to
number 28.
Right, sure. I thought you were referring to my age at the time or something. Nah.
All right, touchy.
So, this was my sort of introduction to Killing Joke.
Same here.
I must have known Love Like Blood, but because they then went into this industrial kind of sound with Youth producing... Mm. I was just all over it. It was a great album. Democracy, the follow-up, is all right.
Yeah.
And then they did that weird left turn into absolutely aggressive metal, which some of their later albums are just so good. It's so heavy.
Well, I remember at the time when this came out, the music press were all over it because they were like, oh, return to form, you know, big tunes. It wasn't just this kind of left field or off kilter stuff. It was like, no, there's a massive riff in this one, and so it was a big deal. I bought this single. I think I did a 7-inch of this. I bought that, and I enjoyed it, but I didn't investigate the album any further because it was like, yeah, this is good, but it's not blowing my mind.
Oh, that's a brilliant album.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a rare album where I'd say side B is better than side A.
Oh, fuck. Oh, wow, that is rare.
That and Psalm 69 by Ministry.
Right. And potentially...
don't know if I'm going along with that.
Public Enemy's Nation of Millions, because they swapped the sides accidentally.
Yeah.
Side A was supposed to be side B, but it went to the pressing plant wrong. okay, well, fucking well done, mate. I didn't think either of you were actually going to get that. I'm very impressed. Very impressed. The next one that I've listed, I then couldn't find on Spotify, so I can't play you Abigail's Smells Like Teen Spirit, if you remember that. Ooh, really bad dance cover version.
Jesus, no. I don't remember
Well,
that.
You're lucky, that's fine. Number 68, and I imagine... Dave, I can't imagine you'll get this. I love this tune, but it's not your wheelhouse. Cliff, I don't know if you were into this at all at the time. It only got to number 68. US kind of college rocky.
Yeah, well, I can tell that. But.
Oh, kind of Mercury Revy kind of.
Oh. Oh, is it Belly?
No.
Is it?
No. Not as big as Belly or Breeders, no.
Sound familiar vocal.
I'm not sure if...
And they're American.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if the vocalist then guested on some stuff. But I don't... Because it's not Hope Sandoval, who did guest on some stuff. But I don't know. It's Madder Rose. This car song by Madder Rose. And yeah, I love this. I've still got this record. I think it's just lovely. Very kind of... It, you know, this is exactly what it does. It does quiet, loud, quiet, loud.
One of the few you've kept.
One of the, indeed, yeah, absolutely. But yeah, that's a goodie. And then the last one I've got, and I kind of expect you to get it, and I kind of expect you not to. We'll see if... Because I don't know whether this is one of the more well-known songs by this person or not. There's a
devil waiting outside your... Well, Nick Cave.
It is Nick Cave, yes, indeed. It only got to number 88. 1994.
So... Trying to think what album that would be. I'm thinking probably Henry Murder Salsing. Ballads.
No.
No, it's not.
Henry Stream.
No.
It's not Murder Ballads.
No.
It's
off a Boatman's song?
No.
Nah, I can't remember what this song was called. I've heard this song.
It's on Let Love In, apparently.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
The problem I've got with Nick Cave albums is I bought like about 8 of them within about a 4-month period.
Oh, right.
And so I don't know what's on what. I just know the songs.
Right.
I've heard the song, but yeah.
Yeah, when you got Nick Cave, obviously, it is called Loverman.
Yeah,
I think it's the cover of the Shabba Ranks. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Indeed. Oh, fuck's sake.
Yeah, okay. But no, fair enough. But there you are. There's your singles. Not bad going, I think.
Great stuff.
Some stuff there that was pretty decent, and I did not expect anyone to get Killing Joke, so I'm very happy about that.
I wish I could come back and play that every week.
we'll dial you in, man.
This segment never intended to be this. It's just we were going to go through the singles and talk about them, and I don't know how it ended up being that I was quizzing Dave on it. But yeah, very quickly, that's what it became, and I love it. Indeed. It does make me very happy whenever Dave is like visibly struggling, like... breaking a sweat because it's making him so angry.
It's just a lot of it's so close. Because I suspect a lot of the time, if you don't know me and you only know me from the podcast, and you hear that, you'd probably think it's all affectation.
Oh, right.
But it is fucking, and you've known me for long enough.
No, yeah.
If I say I know this, I'm not like bullshitting. I genuinely think
in there.
And every now and if it comes out and I'm like, oh, actually no, that's not what I think it was. I try and be quite honest about it.
Sure.
But yeah, nothing fucks with my mind more than being able to not recall one of those songs.
One of the best feelings. It's brilliant. Right. Okay, well, we should go back into the final third of Music for the Gentle Generation. So we are now at the last four songs, and we have come to what was the actual first single release. This is One Love.
Bit of an Eastern feel.
Sorry, what?
Bit of an Eastern feel.
Come on, mate.
the first guess is actually fucking said
brilliant.
It.
Love it. But this is the one. So I do remember this coming out because I was coming off the back of enjoying the first Prodigy stuff. And I was like, oh, this is the new one, is it? And I immediately went, nah, okay, whatever. And it put me off. And so they had to like work to get me back in. I thought I was going to be interested, and it took me back a step.
It's not very good, this track.
Look, man.
And there's hardly any not very good Prodigy songs, in my opinion, across their seven albums. But this is weak. It does get better later on once there's a few more elements introduced. And I do quite like that. The video is dog shit.
Oh, I don't even remember the video for this.
It's just a load of brown CGI.
Fractally.
Sort of, but more kind of diarrhea-y.
Oh, lovely.
Oh, nice. So, yeah, okay. That's what we're looking for. Look, there's only one word you need to know to describe this fucking song, and it's didgeridoo. Do you know what I mean? No. Didgeridoo, didgeridoo don't. Right? Just didgeridoo
diarrhea.
Don't, right? It's... I can't get past the didgeridoo. And, you know... That sounds like I'm being... like. No, I'm sure it's amazing in Aboriginal fucking First Nation music.
Oh, right.
I don't want to hear it outside of that context.
I
don't really want to hear it in that context.
Sure. But. I mean, this is the one we were talking about earlier that was originally, 8 minutes or something long?
Can you imagine?
They had to cut some bits, something, to make it fit onto one CD. And Liam trimmed this down to, 3 minutes 10?
3 minutes 40.
3 minutes, right. Because, it's called One Love Edit. And I can see why, because you get the idea, and I can't imagine it went anywhere particularly amazing in the original. I don't think this is particularly good. I'm not a fan of it.
This is one of my least favourite tracks on the record.
Right. Yeah, I don't get this. Maybe
probably my least favourite track on the record.
I see. And I suspect... it being the first single, it got to number 8 in the charts. Maybe it being the first single was kind of the record company's influence going, oh no, everyone remembers Experience. This sounds more like that. Let's chuck that one out. But they should have just gone straight in with No Good Starter Dance.
Yeah.
They just should have broken in with that. But, yeah. Okay.
And this is the other track that Liam Howlett says he would leave off the album.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. He's even kind of turned his back on it. Fine. Okay, well, that I can see them.
Can't say I remember ever seeing them play it live. You know?
Oh, there's a point, I wonder. No.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking back at the old set lists, and I mean, like, realistically, for the last multiple tours, they play four songs off of this all the time. You know exactly what they're going to be. Yeah, it's the three other singles and Their Law.
Their Law.
And that's what you get, basically.
I see, okay. All right. Well, this, I think, could be trimmed off and nobody would notice, and that would be fine.
And it remains the second most represented album in their live shows.
After Fat the Land?
Yeah.
Right. Well, that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, that makes absolute sense. Yeah.
Right. Let's move on.
Let's move on. Okay.
So now we get into an interesting thing. We get the
Narcotic Suite.
The Narcotic Suite. So it's a three-track kind of triptych, I guess we call
it. Yeah, sure. The final three songs, bracketed together for that reason.
Yeah, so obviously the first one, obviously they're Narcotic Suite. I'm guessing they're going to be each influenced by a different drug. So
all right.
First one is the Ganja Man.
Well, it's called 3 Kilos.
And it's, low-key.
White Man's Reggae Club.
Low-key, chilly, jazzy, dubby. I mean...
this is where I went for a piss and went to the bar.
Yeah.
No one needs to dance to this.
No.
What would you do?
No.
With a can of Red Stripe on one leg in the air.
Yeah, I know. This is almost embarrassingly bad, this song.
And it's also 7 minutes long.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this is an entire misstep, this. I think, I don't see the need for this track.
Yeah.
I'm not going to write off the entire Narcotic Suite yet.
Okay.
But I don't see any need for this track at all. Yeah. I think we're all kind of seem to be on the same page that that's the case.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 2.5 minutes in, you get presumably Phil Bent live flute. I don't know how he bent it, but...
By feeling it too much.
I think if you stick your finger in one end and blow really hard.
Can you imagine the fucking time that Phil Bent must have had at high school? How'd you feel today, mate? Bent. Hey! Playing your flute.
Yeah. Now, I think this... I mean, I don't know if this was made with, like, chill-out rooms or something like that in mind. But even for that... It's like, this
well, I don't think it. No, I don't know if this Narcotic Suite was conceived as a suite or if it's just three leftover tracks that he bunged on the end of the album and said, let's. Because the drugs references thing does work.
Right. And again, like you said, you know, if you were on the particular drugs that he's wanting you to be on for this one, maybe it's a totally different. If you were in your student house. And you know, you make sure you're on a beanbag and you're spliffed off your face.
No.
Maybe it hits differently. No. I don't know.
I've smoked a lot of weed, and this is not what I want to hear.
No, I had a mate who, he's still a mate, but when he was introduced to me to weed, he insisted that, you know, it's Bob Marley that you put on.
No, it's not.
Like, no, it's fucking.
Wow.
No, actually, I'll tell you what I'm into and what I'd like to listen to right now, Nick. It's the Nail Bomb album, please.
Nice.
I remember once in our old house when Power Trip by Monster Magnet come out, I once got pretty catastrophically stoned on my own and tried to listen to that record.
Yeah.
And it started scaring me.
Oh, nice.
And like my CD player was at the end of the bed.
Mm.
And rather than turn it off, I just hid under the covers.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Okay, back to this song. It doesn't do it for me. It sounds a little bit like he wants to be doing the stuff that The Orb were doing around this time. And I kind of like The Orb, but I don't like this. Because this is...
It doesn't go dubby enough, really, does it?
No, but also because this is the end of the record, I have this on double vinyl. So this was right at the end of, you know, flipping stuff over. I skipped the end bit of this album every time.
Okay.
I think because of this song, probably. It's like, oh, this one's on. Oh, fuck it, I'll go back to the start.
Yeah, right, let's go. Let's move on. Track two in the
Narcotic Suite.
The Narcotic Suite is called Skyline.
So this is the ecstasy one, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah, there's certainly psychedelic-y in it. This is like kind of itchy in the head, isn't it, this kind of bit.
The rush is coming up.
And it's, you know...
This one takes a while to get going as well.
Yeah, and then when it does, it's real, hands in the air.
Now, listen to this, right? You'll appreciate this. Hear this. That reminds me of the news jingle from RoboCop.
Okay, I mean... All right.
Wow.
This is Media Break. Give us 60 seconds and we'll give you the world.
Wow. That's the sort of... like drilling down trivia you're going to get on the Devil Times 5 podcast as well.
Yeah, and jokes about dicks and
well, of course. Of course.
So like, this is going to open up again. We're in that kind of trancey feel.
Oh, we're getting these kind of alien spaceship sounds, something like that coming in, or lasers again.
Yeah,
I'm definitely more into this than I was the last one, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to open out into what I've described as a shamanic rhythm.
Oh.
Right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, that sounds awful.
Yeah.
I like it.
You're in? Okay. I don't know if not being in a darkened living room and not being off my face on pills has an effect on this. I think this is a bit dull.
But it does this.
Oh, no, that's nice. It's cinematic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I think it's expansive and experimental, but it's not necessarily what I'm looking for at this point of the record. That's my criticism of this.
Right.
I don't mind this in and of itself, but I want this in the middle as a break or at the start as an intro. I don't necessarily want it here.
I see, okay.
You know what this sequencing reminds me of? It's the last three tracks on Ill Communication.
Okay.
Where you're like, is this good? All this chanting and, you know.
What is that with fire?
Yeah.
I also, the note I had on it was Literalist by Tool, where you've got like that three tracks, triad, fucking...
Right.
Hope to what? I can never...
The one that you can pronounce, yeah.
Yeah.
Womp, womp, womp.
Yeah, see, this is all good stuff.
No, this is fine. Yeah, I do. I like from when it comes in with that swell, And this bit, I think that, this again, this is a 6 minute song. It's taken a minute and a half to get to here. I think there is a middle section where it doesn't do much else, which is maybe fine. Maybe that's what you just like, all right, we've got ourselves going, this is what we're doing. But I find it, by the end of the song, I find it a bit of a drag.
I like it.
Yeah. I mean, I'd take this over something like...
Actually, now I'm listening to this through my headphones. That is nice there. That's nice.
I'd take this over like fucking, what's it called? The Heat.
Right. Oh, you see, I'd keep The Heat over this, I think.
Okay.
I would definitely... I mean, I'd take 3 kilos off straight away and I'd take One Love off straight away.
But, Dave, do you not think it's got a good groove to it?
Yeah.
Sorry, mate, I can't understand what you're saying.
Wonderful.
Anyway.
Oh, I love it.
Put him on the band list, right? all right, so it's a bit mixed on this one. I don't mind it. I think it's all right. It's not necessarily in the right place for me, I think.
Okay.
But I've got no real issue with the track itself. It is a little bit meandering. It needs to be a little bit shorter.
Yeah.
I'd like it to get to where it's going a little bit quicker. And that's not the point, maybe. But
yeah, I mean, there's still, you know, 2.5 minutes to go on this before the end. But then because I thought in my head as well, I remembered that these all flowed into each other, but the last one and this one don't. But if I skip to the end of this one,
it's kind of wishy-washy sound.
It does go into the very, very last song, which is Claustrophobic Sting.
Yeah, this is the Scary Acid Trip.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I absolutely love this.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah, I love this one as well. This is incredible.
I think this is the best of these three.
It's
easily
a great way to close the album.
Well, back in with the 303.
For me, I'd have fucked the last two off probably in terms of sequencing.
Right.
Well, and One Love, and just fucking gone no good into this.
I see. Okay.
Well, that might be a bit jarring, maybe. But
you could come out of Poison into this.
But this is like the reptile on fucking on Downward Spiral almost.
Oh god! Yeah, wow.
Transformative kind of
right
chrysalis break of a tune.
And of course, when I went to that club and they played the whole album, this is the first time I've ever got to, you know, dance to this track. And you just absolutely lose yourself in that 303 that just goes round and round and round and round and round, buries itself into your head. It's fucking incredible. It's sending chills down me right now.
Oh, wow, nice. Right.
And it also, funnily enough, reminds me of there's a track on that Killing Joke album we were talking about. Exorcism, which is it's an 8.5 minute long track. I thought it just plugs away at the same thing for 8.5 minutes.
Okay.
And it's just incredible.
It buries itself in there.
Yeah.
Nice, all right. Because, this is over 7 minutes long, this song. And while it's taking its time to build, it is building. You know, it's some weird shit going on in this. And the 303 squelchy acid sound is always a favourite. But yeah, there you go. You're back in dancing. You've been kind of sitting down for, you know, a little bit, or you've been chilling out or wondering what's going on, and you are. You're back up on your feet now. But yeah, this is a good way to close the album. If they'd closed on either of the other two, it might have been a little bit more limp.
Yeah.
But yeah, wicked. Well, there you go. Yeah,
love this tune. Brilliant. Great way to close the album off.
That's
okay.
That's it, man.
Right, before we do our summation of the album, we put this out on social media, and fuck me, it turns out some people like The Prodigy.
Yeah.
What a surprise. I never had any idea. We got a lot of responses on Twitter, a lot of responses on Facebook. So let's
go for it. Right, let's get into it.
See what we got. True Cut Pop, presuming this is Stephen. Best Prodigy album, arguably the best electronic album ever made. Wow, that is...
Blimey.
Absolutely wouldn't go that far.
Well, I wouldn't go that far either, but it's a bold statement. But the third CD I ever bought, Queen Greatest Hits 2, and Bad, if you're asking.
Wow.
Not only fantastic political statement, a game changer in terms of genre crossover and bringing the art of the album to rave culture.
Yeah, well, I think that's all fair points there.
Yeah.
Would you both agree that this is the best Prodigy album?
No. I prefer Experience. I prefer Always Outnumbered, Never Outgunned.
Right.
So those last three albums, Invaders Must Die, The Days of Our Enemy, and No Tourists, they're very samey. They're all great.
Right.
They barely put a foot wrong though.
What about you, Dave? What's your favourite Prodigy album?
I mean, I think it's a basic bitch answer, but I think Fat of the Land's a better record. I just think it's I think it's taut and it's the hits machine. I would have said before I went back to this album, I'd have gone, Dual Generation's the best one. I listened to this and I went back and listened to Fat of the Land and I went, ah, do you know what?
I think
it edges it.
Fair play.
And, you know, I hate to have the populist opinion, but...
You certainly do. I think, know that of you.
I think Fat of the Land has got some of their best tracks, but it's also got some quite plodding rubbish on it.
Maybe. I mean, we're going to revisit it, aren't we? It's number one album.
It is, yeah. So it will be indeed. We will see that.
We'll see where we get to on it. So I won't say too much about it right now.
I got Simon Draps on Facebook says, one of the top five albums from my time in Luton. He was one of the guys that used to come to the clubs I was playing. He says, ask him, Chris, every night to play something from it like I actually needed to. And I, you know, it's true. I was DJing at the time. I was doing an indie club. I was doing the student union sort of their just party night. I don't think I was doing rock clubs yet, but... Every night I was playing something from this album, because if it was like just a more populous one, you'd do No Good. If it was an indie one, you'd play Poison. Something for everyone that I was playing to. It was great. He says as well, this album is also one of two that transformed my tastes from purely rock, metal, indie and introduced dance music into my life.
Fair play. The Zeros podcast, our friend Niall. Kurt died. Tony Blair became PM in waiting. I don't think the two things were connected. And this album came out, thus began the rest of the 90s, which is,
Tristan Forbes on Facebook says, love this album. Certainly was life-defining. I love all the tracks. The inside picture of the rope bridge across the canyon between Babylon and the green fields of freedom still resonates for me. My only problem was Liam Howlett publicly distancing himself from the DIY scene. I didn't realise that he'd done that.
Phil Guffrey on Twitter, this was everywhere. Singles were all over the radio and indie clubs. Bruising Beats, a little bit of politics, PWIE, guesting, and even Kerrang! Magazine took notice. A brilliant crossover album, No Good, would be my pick of the tracks.
Daniel Perry said, I remember seeing them just before this album dropped at the Queensway Hall in Dunstable. Fantastic live back, even back then. I grew up on the first three Prodigy albums, and they seemed to cross over into nearly every scene and genre. You better have nice things to say about this one. Well, we did. We definitely did.
Well, that's the thing. Isn't it? They were ubiquitous. Everyone liked them. That was the thing. If you went to a Prodigy gig, you would see ravers and hip-hop heads and fucking rockers and fucking Neds. Everyone was there, man. Dave Roddy, not a Ray fan, didn't like Experience, but heard No Good and was like, fucking hell. Had a mate tape the album for me. Suddenly I was into dance music, kind of. Voodoo People, Poison the Standout, but Their Law and the PWE influence was my favourite. Saw them not long live after. Superb.
Lovely. Martin Crowe said, this album was the first time I'd experienced heavy music that wasn't purely metal or rock and opened up an entire genre for me. Quite literally redefined what heavy meant for a teenage me. I'm very grateful for its existence. After going back years later and learning a bit more about the samples and manipulations that Liam Howlett used to get these sounds, it still fascinates me. The guy's a genius. Edie Colclough. Hated the Prodigy at the time of release, was very anti-dance because of my old dance is shit teenage stubbornness, but then I heard Pop Lead Itself for guesting on it and that changed my view slightly. Ended up backtracking once I'd heard Fat of the Land. This is a great album with lots of classic on it. I mean, there's a lot of people saying this was the way that they got into dance music.
I mean, it was the way I got into
it. It really was. It was a big deal for anyone who was more into guitars.
Okay, Richard Toomey saying he spent a lot of time studying the drawing on the inner sleeve. Groob's Fawn, Luke, first Prodigy album I heard in full. Classic album for me, No Good, One Love, Their Law are great. Also, basically the soundtrack to the film Hackers, which is so bad it's good.
Oh, yeah, there were two songs off this on Hackers.
Well, there is. Yeah, there's Prodigy. It's been a long time since I've seen Hackers.
I don't think I've ever seen Hackers.
No, I've never seen it,
no. And
you've never seen it?
No.
Wow.
Fucking hell, man. I'm just always amazed when there's a film that you haven't seen.
Just always thought it looked shit.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's why I haven't seen it.
Our mate Lloyd has said, yes, a proper gateway album for me. It changed the way I looked at dance music as a whole. I remember hearing No Good start the dance and being blown away. I'd not really paid attention to stuff from the previous albums. It wasn't in my wheelhouse at the time, but this was a completely different thing.
Gaz Jones, first time I realised metalheads were gatekeeping pricks. When Kerrang started covering them long after the release, Maiden is metal, this isn't metal, this was the heaviest shit I'd ever heard. There are still floor fillers whenever I DJ, a new dawn had started.
You know what, when they headline Download, or the second stage, I think it was the first time they played that, that was one of the best times I've ever seen them. The crowd was so up for it.
Yeah.
It was incredible. And
was that Fat of the Land time, or was that...
No, that would have been...
Oh, no, Download, it was...
Invaders Must Die.
Oh, right,
time.
Okay.
And it was still at that point, I just didn't understand it. There was like gatekeeping. Well, fucking Prodigy don't belong. Yeah. It's like, what do you mean the Prodigy? It was like in the 2000s. What do you mean the Prodigy don't belong at a rock and metal festival? Yeah. Grow up. Man, I mean, Chase and Status, I saw the argument that maybe that wasn't the spot for them, right?
Okay. Lethal Bizzle.
And yeah. But, you know, I mean, I don't care. I'll fucking go and see them. I'd much rather go to a Bizzle diverse festival. But yeah, but fucking hell, man. Like, just, yeah, metalers can shut the fuck up. I don't get me wrong. I've been a metaler. And I've got a lot of love for a lot of metalers. But those fucking basement dwelling pricks, go fuck yourselves.
Well, the ones like, you'll argue, well, no. It's black metal is the one you want to listen to.
Well, actually.
None of this, you know, death metal nonsense. Like,
it's like people, you know, that's the conversation. It's people that will gatekeep, like argue intensely about these two pieces of music that to 99% of the population sound identical. Yeah. It's like, who are you trying to win a war with?
Calm down.
Why does it matter? Anyway, carry on.
Warren Avis, good album this. However, after all these years, it feels more a stepping stone between Experience and Fat of the Land. There's a couple of great tracks on it, but Experience and Fat of the Land outshine this. Now we can look back. That's not to say I didn't play the hell out of it when it was released. So, okay, he's another one that thinks Fat of the Land was a kind of a step up from this, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, even now I've said it, I'm almost starting to backslide on it a little bit. I wouldn't go as far as saying this was a stepping stone. I think this is an evolution, and I think this
sure.
is. I prefer this to Experience by a fucking chunk. But there we go.
I just remember that L7 cover at the end of the Land. That's not
that's
good.
A shame. That's a shame.
Oh, what do they do? What do they
cover? Fire.
Yeah. Oh, God, I fucking forgot about that. I've blanked that out. Right, okay. Mike Albert, loved it then, loved it now. Like many others, it's what made me a raver. Saw them live on this tour. It was like nothing I'd ever seen. Best track, Skylined. Oh, worst track, Their Law.
Whoa.
I mean, that's an opinion, Mike.
That's flipping stuff on its head right there.
Different opinions are available, but fair fucks to you, my friend.
Fair. Thank you for getting in contact. Lee Vincent, he says, love this album. I did A-level performing arts at Luton Sixth Form.
Yeah, he did.
Wow. And I did a dance to Voodoo People.
Big up, Lee.
Would be quite hilarious to watch that back.
Gaz Meredith, much like Stacked Up by Sensor Band, this album is still on my weekly rotation 30 years on.
Matt Bradley has said, Matt Bradley, by the way, he was the guy who said that Chuckle Vision. The riff song that Chuckle Vision. So it's his fault if you ever hear it again and you can't get it out of your head. He says, I remember at 17 there were a handful of albums that were the common ground for the different genre fan bases amongst the people I knew. Bands like Therapy, Blur, Stereo MCs, Public Enemy, Censor provided a bit of crossover between these fan bases, but everyone agreed on Music for the Children Generation, and I feel it stands up really well 30 years later. Break and Enter, Voodoo People, and No Good Start the Dance still go hard. It's an album that probably is a bit too long, and a couple of tracks near the end could easily have been cut and made a better record, but there's nothing terrible on it. Just in terms of, you know, albums from that year, I made a little note here that this album was nominated for the Mercury Music Prize in 1994, along with Blur's Park Life, Therapy Trouble Gum, Pulp, His and Hers, and various other ones. But it didn't win, and do you want to have a guess at what did win?
Was that M People?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Motherfuckers.
Elegant Slumming. Unbelievable.
Never had another one album, though. Go fuck yourselves.
I know. Ridiculous.
Thank fuck.
Ridiculous. And then our mate Simon Sharp, who has been on the podcast with us before. This was a gateway album for so many of our generation. Along with Orbital's Brown album and the early Chemical Brothers remixes, it opened up dance music for me. There's been a rock element to the Prodigy from this point on, but for me it was a natural step from the percussion-heavy hip-hop I was loving at the time, which makes sense given the Bomb Squad's influence on Howlett. Hearing Voodoo People was probably the moment I fell in love with the energy of dance music. That's nicely said. And there's so much Bomb Squad production. You say you hear RZA in it. Yeah. I hear so much Bomb Squad in that too.
I hear both, but yeah.
Gotcha.
Anyway, right.
Magic.
So look, let's sum up this record. I mean, to be honest with you, I think the second from last comment that you just read out pretty much is where I'm at, which is I think this is a great, great record. I think it could do with a little bit of editing here and there, a little bit of a trim. Mm-hmm. You could have probably lost a couple of tracks and you've had a much more taut album. Sure. I don't think any album would be running out any more than an hour, to be honest with you.
Yeah, a 60-minute version of this would be sublime.
But those are very, very, very minor niggles, man.
Sure.
I love this record. I think it's fucking brilliant.
Cliff, summing up? Going back to it now for
any day listening to Prodigy is a good day. They are, if you take into account artists who have never put out a bad album, who are always great live, It's between The Prodigy and Peaches for my all-time favourite act.
Right, Jesus.
For those reasons. Neither have ever put out a bad album. Always great live. Benga Boys obviously do not have a good album. Yeah, so where does Your Generation fit into that? I would say it's kind of in the middle of their discography. It's a classic, though, because they're just so good. They've got about four classics.
It's an absolute classic. It consistently comes, you know, high in, you know, best album of the 90s polls and reviews and stuff like that. It is such a groundbreaker that it did make a lot of people listen to dance music who would never have done so before. And maybe they would have done so, you know, in a year's time when they then heard the Chemical Brothers or something else. But this was the one that came first. This was the one that opened the door. And for that alone, it's a huge point of history.
It's an overused phrase, like so overused, but this is an actual game changer.
It really is. Yeah. It did. Honestly is. Yeah.
You can see it from everyone's written in. It changed people's direction.
Yeah,
I went away to university in like 1995, full of hardcore records and alternative records, and basically listened to dance music for 2 years,
right?
Pretty much exclusively, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Liam Howlett, off the back of this, was asked by a popular 1980s children's TV character to write some music for him and his brothers. That character, it was the smaller bear from Play School, and Liam called the album Music for the Lil Ted Generation.
Lovely.
Ted.
Oh, hold on,
have we got a fucking Photoshop?
Come on.
Yes, mate.
You've gone the full PCL, man.
That's fucking fantastic.
Amazing. That's going up on the fucking... That's going on the socials.
Yep, right. We'll put that up straight away. Well done.
Yeah, there has been a sad lack of terrible jokes, actually, this time around.
It's true.
Yeah, it's a real shame, because I was convinced that Krista was going to do a load of his usual ones. Yeah. Liam Howlett made a special edition of it made of gold. It's music for the Guilted Generation.
Amazing.
Oh, he made a special Scottish edition. Guilted Generation. he made a version with lime and lemon. He did the jingle for their advert. Music for the Guilted Generation.
Lovely.
Oh, it's a really soft album cover. Music for the Quilted Generation. There's one that you just open up the record and a load of dirt falls out. Music for the Silted Generation.
What you're not seeing here is... He's printed all of these out individually. There's been a lot of
prep. No, I want to hear these last ones. Yeah.
No, it's all right.
No, come on.
All right, Tilted Generation, Wilted Generation. I just thought you'd do.
Fucking brilliant.
I thought you'd do all of them and load a piece on your parade.
Amazing, thank you. Absolutely. Round of applause, Cliff. Well done, Cliff, man.
You know, you've been one of my absolute favourite guests on this podcast.
Absolutely banging.
Guys, have you got anything you want to plug?
Well, we've got to put songs on the playlist first.
Oh, fuck yeah. So we've got to put fucking songs on the playlist. Okay.
All right. Mm. So, I mean, are we going full three songs on this?
I mean,
bearing in mind they're all 8 minutes long, but...
Yeah. I mean, I don't care. I listen to the playlist.
Right. But this is going to be... It's going to be an interesting one, though. Okay. So, if you were going to choose your three, Dave, what three would they be?
Oh, man. I don't want to be... The obscure music snob in me doesn't want to pick three singles.
I get you.
But the person that likes the songs on this album wants to pick three singles. Now, I would probably pick... I would definitely pick Voodoo People.
Okay.
Maybe I'd pick... It might be as simple as... Poison Voodoo People and No Good. Mm-hmm, but I don't want it to be. Maybe, do you know what? I think I'm going to put Claustrophobic. I think I'm going to vote Claustrophobic Sting.
Yeah. Right, you'd have that up there, okay.
I think I would vote that over Voodoo People, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know, man. I really like Voodoo People. I think it's a fucking brilliant track. But Poison is... flawless. I've got to have Poison.
Right.
Got to have Poison.
Yeah, for me, Voodoo People, of the singles that I liked, which is the three that aren't One Love, Voodoo People is the one that I was like, I don't need to hear this again so much because I'd played it too much at the time. Not too much. I don't dislike it, but I was like, no, okay, fine. I don't need to have this one.
Yeah.
So I would be happy losing Voodoo People. I think Poison is probably my high point for this.
Poison's done. Poison's in.
I would do Break and Enter. I think Break and Enter is fucking fantastic.
Let's stick Break and Enter then.
And then No Good?
I mean, if I got the casting vote, I would say Poison, Break and Enter, Claustrophobic Sting.
Right, okay.
I think that's a good non-populist way of doing it.
Sure.
I could go easily either way. I could go the populist way, which is sticks no good on.
Mm-hmm.
Presuming most people have heard no good.
Yeah.
People may not have heard claustrophobic sting. But what did you think of claustrophobic sting?
I think it's very good.
Right.
I think it's very good. It didn't blow my mind.
Okay.
But, you know, again, I've heard no good sorry dance loads. I don't need to hear it again, but
I'm happy either or, so I'm going to let Cliff have the casting.
Fine. Break. So claustrophobic sting, poison, and break and enter.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's what we'll do. Three. It's the first time we've done three in a while.
It is the first time we've done three in a while.
In a good while.
Which fucking first time we've done more than one in a while.
There's been
some bad shit lately. Yeah. Mate, thank you so much for coming on and being a guest with us, Cliff. You got anything you want to plug, my friend?
Pleasure. Yeah, Devil Times 5 Horror Podcast. It's a monthly comedy podcast about horror movies. We cover 5 films of a particular theme each month and try to talk about them a bit, but generally get sidelined on
your
nonsense.
Current one that's out at the minute. We're now recording at the start of April 2024.
Yeah, so the one that's just out, just came out last week is on nunsploitation movies.
Indeed.
If you want a starting point and you want a familiar voice, then do go and check out the one about superhero movies,
which featured
the best looking man in podcasting.
Adam Buxton.
Wicked Man, thank you so much for coming on, man.
This has been
an absolute blast. I've really enjoyed it. What's our next?
The next one is the Rolling Stones.
Hooray.
Yeah.
And we've got another guest on for that. Gaz Jones from True Cult Pop. An album I know less well than this.
Indeed,
one,
I didn't play that quite as often.
Is that Voodoo Lounge?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. So we'll see
the
how
voodoo,
that goes.
Voodoo, what you don't lounge, people. All right, so until next time, motherfuckers, we'll see you then. Take it easy.
Thank you. Thank you for checking out this episode of Pop Collaborate and Listen. It was produced and edited by us, for which we can only apologise. We are on Twitter at PCL Podcast, on Instagram also at PCL Podcast, and facebook.com/PCL Podcast. All of these, plus links to our various Spotify playlists, etc., are on our website, which is PCLpodcast.com. Please feel free to get in contact via any of the social media or on PCLmusicpodcast@gmail.com.